with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Past the hour, and we begin a brand new week of broadcasting here on the Horn, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. We call it the Horn. It's the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com, where you can go and enjoy the chat room at the same time as listening to the program. If you're listening live, it's free. The registration is easy. The room is, well, folks are just beginning to wander in to begin this new broadcast week. You are, of course, always invited. Hey, Blue Ape. Hey, Sparky. Hey, E. Coker. Hey, Jug of Punch. You can reach the show, you know, of course, by emailing Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, bobkincaid@gmail.com. That much, I hope, is easy. It was a pleasant weekend. It was a weekend that, Super Bowl Sunday was yesterday. And I hope you enjoyed it. I did. I got the outcome I wanted. Why? I'm old school. When there's a contest between an old NFL franchise and an old AFL franchise, I root for the NFL franchise, I guess. But I know there are some heartbroken New England fans. Yeah, one of them might even qualify for a Moran nomination. Nobody in the Horn family, of course. No, Mrs. Tom Brady. Gisele Bündchen. Yeah, I guess some Giants fan was taunting her. Yelling, Eli rules! Eli owns your husband! To which Mrs. Brady responded, my husband can't effing throw the ball and catch the ball at the same time. I can't believe they dropped the ball so many times. Yeah. Let's see. There's a possibility there. But no, it's Moran Monday on the Horn. You know what that means. Yeah. We've got a wide cross-section of right-wing idiots for your delectation. That's right, hurry, hurry, hurry. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Get your programs here. This is the program that tells the Morans you just can't tell them much for nothing little more than 5 cents an hour. For the programming that tells the Morans but can't tell them much, you can step behind this cybernetic veil and hear and witness and be privy to the strangeness that is right-wing Morans here on the Horn on Moran Monday. Pregnant women are advised not to enter the tent for fear that they will receive a fright. Purses should be hung onto at all times, as the Morans, being repiglicans, have been known to grab at people's money. Remember, after all, they want it all. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Experience the shock. See the horror. Hear the manifest perversity that is a right-wing Moran. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. You understand? Moran Monday on the Horn is underway. Your nominations welcome. Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D @gmail.com. Okie dokie. Good. I tweeted just a few minutes ago my personal opening Moran nomination. This via our blogger, Texas Betsy. It's one of those you kind of... Well, there's a certain amount of identification here. I have a teenage daughter. I have two of them. I have a teenage son. But I'm thinking particularly about my youngest, my soon-to-be 15-year-old teenage daughter. She has a best friend. She's in the ninth grade, you know. She has a best friend, and they are practically inseparable. They're best friends. They sleep over and do all of that kind of fun stuff. And they say things like, you know, I'm glad you're my best friend, and I'm glad you're my best friend, and I love you, and I love you. Yeah? Okay. Well, apparently, that doesn't go over well with the Church of the Prince of Peace. Or at least it doesn't go over well with the Roman Catholic Church if it happens in a school setting and it's being said in one of them funny languages that ain't Latin nor English nor French. No, really. I honestly wish I was kidding about this. We're talking about the story of a seventh grader in Shawano, Wisconsin. Her name is Miranda Washinawatok. She is of the Menominee people. She lives on the Menominee, on or near the Menominee Reservation. She's a seventh grade basketball player, and she is a lovely, lovely young woman. Apparently quite intelligent into the bargain, because she's multilingual. You know, for a long, long time, and folks in both Australia and North America can address this, there was just this thing about Europeans trying to wipe out natives speaking their own language. There are horrible tales of young Native American First Peoples children being brutally whipped and mistreated by their quite often Christian teachers for daring to speak their mother tongue. In this case, the mother tongue is Menominee. Well, Miranda Washinawatok, I hope I'm even getting close. I'm pronouncing phonetically, so if I'm getting it wrong, forgive me or correct me or whatever. Speaks Menominee in English, and she's a basketball player on her, I guess that would be either junior high or middle school team. She goes to the ironically named Sacred Heart Catholic Academy in Shawano, Wisconsin, which I'm also probably mispronouncing. More than 60% of the children attending that school are American Indian. As the story from the Native News Network points out, the school is approximately 6 miles from the south border of the Menominee Indian Tribe Reservation. So they had a basketball game, the Sacred Heart Catholic Academy girls did, on January the 19th. And on January the 19th, the basketball coach went to young Miranda Washinawatok and said, "You're being benched tonight. You can't play." Huh?
What, Edith?
So young Miranda goes home and tells her mama. Her mama is Tanais Washinawatok. She said, "On January 19th, I was told by Miranda she was being benched from playing that night. I found it out at 4:20. And we were back at school at 6:30 p.m. so I could get to the bottom of why she could not play." And Mama kept asking daughter, "Well, why? And the only thing that Miranda could say is that the assistant coach said she was being benched because two teachers said she had a bad attitude. A bad attitude. So, Tanais Washinawatok went to the coaching staff And the coaching staff said, "Ah, we don't know. You need to talk to the teacher." So she went to talk to the teacher. And the teacher said, "Well, you know, who they play and who they don't play, that's the business of the coach. I mean, what do we know?" So Mama on a mission goes to the principal's office, but of course the principal cannot be found. So the game starts. And Miranda is benched. Still, for things that aren't abundantly or even remotely clear. So Mama does what Mamas do, and she shows up back at the school at 7:20 the following morning. And, you know, it's not necessarily because you assume that your little pumpkin is always in the right. You know, sometimes if they've done something grievously wrong, being a concerned and active parent engaged in the education of your child, you want to help reinforce any discipline that was handed down and say, "No, they're right. You messed up. That was the wrong thing to do." So, 7:30 the next morning, there's Miranda's mama in the principal's office. And it's still proving a little bit hard to get to the bottom of. Because the principal says that Miranda got benched because the assistant coach said she was told by two teachers to bench Miranda for attitude problems. Okay, drill down one more layer. The attitude problem turned out to be two words. Poso and ketapanin. Again, my pronunciation is sketchy and just done phonetically. It may be something else. But poso and ketapanin. It turns out that Miranda and one of her classmates, a friend, remember the school is 60% Menominee, passed in the hallway within earshot of a teacher. Or were talking in class. And one said, "Poso," because Miranda has a working knowledge of her ethno-historical language, and she was sharing it with a fellow student. She said, "Poso means hello." The other word, ketapanen, means "I love you." Apparently it did happen in a classroom, because the teacher at this Catholic school immediately went to the back of the room where they were both sitting, these two young students, and slammed her hand down on the desk and said, "How do I know you're not saying something bad?" Just what? So then that class ends, and the children, Miranda, goes on to the next class, where another teacher says, "I don't appreciate you making Mrs. Snotwhipple angry, upset. I don't like it when Mrs. Snotwhipple is upset. Because she is like a daughter to me." All this over hello, and I love you. So those are the two teachers who went and dropped the dime on little Miranda Washinawatok. Well, that just wasn't playing well with Miranda's mama. Miranda's mama, Tanais, said, "My mother, Karen Washinawatok, is the director of the Language and Culture Commission of the Menominee Tribe. She has a degree in linguistics from the University of Arizona's College of Education, AILDI, American Indian Language Development Institute. She's a former tribal chair and is strong into our culture." It took three meetings before Tanais Washinawatok got an agreement by the school to issue a public apology to Miranda. So this past Wednesday, if I have the story right, in the fairly recent past, the apology, or what passed for one, was issued. The school sent a letter out to parents and guardians. Tanais Washinawatok described it as a real generic letter of apology that really didn't go into specifics as to why there was this apology. "I don't think it was enough," she said. This from the Department of Irony. The Diocese of Green Bay operates Sacred Heart Catholic Academy. And when you call them, you get an option for Spanish, but not Menominee. The Native News Network notes that a call put in late Thursday afternoon last has not been returned as of press time.
"How do I know you're not saying something bad?"
"Well, probably because it doesn't sound like you, Mrs. Snotfinger." Poso Ketapanin. Hello, I love you. Oddly enough, that's the beginning of a song by the Doors. But I don't think that was what was going on at this point. No, at this point in time, it was nothing more than a shameful attempt to suppress heritage. Is that a pronunciation, Jenny? I don't know. That wasn't really clear. The name of the place in Wisconsin is Shawano, not Shawano. Too many vowels. Shawano. Shawano, Wisconsin. Okay. Okay, thank you, Jenny, and thank you, David, in Tennessee. Silent W's. Actually, it's the A. They spelled it S-H-A-W-A-N-O, so I guess this A is silent. The Shawano? See, I knew. I can't get anywhere near the upper Midwest without screwing... the upper Midwest and the Northwest without screwing up the language. But that's okay. Maybe I didn't work over. Jesus, have I been mispronouncing Menominee? And oh dear. But really, really, It's my ignorance that's behind the same thing that drove those teachers, save for the fact that they live there. And they teach these children every day, but they don't want to hear. How could you? White folks. As a white folk, I apologize. I'm sorry. I'm sorry we're this way, but we are. And just bear with us, please. Some of us are learning, or trying at least. Clayton noting, how did that cranky teacher know she said anything? A daughter? Who gives a damn that she's like a daughter to her? Maybe she could have asked, how do you say like a daughter to me in Menominee? I love language. In fact, for a little light reading right now, I'm reading a book on the Aztecs, just because I'm fascinated with that culture and that language. When the Spanish arrived, they did everything they could to wipe out the language spoken by that brilliant culture. And yet, to this day, there are a million native speakers of the same language spoken by the original inhabitants there, soon to be 500 years ago. 600 years. No, 500 years ago. Math on the fly. But because these societies weren't into writing yet, we don't even really know how many languages we eliminated along with the people. I didn't know that Menominee was still a going concern. The upshot out of this is that I'm glad to know it is. And I hope lots of the children there are learning their language, because it is the key that unlocks heritage, that unlocks, you know, entire ways of being and thinking. But some hate-filled follower of Jesus, the only thing they can imagine, how do I know you're not saying something bad about me or that teacher? I mean, she's like a mother to me. Ah! We as human beings have lost more languages than we have. Who's teaching at this school? The Little Sisters of Absolutely No Mercy? Thank you, Fancy. Is there something inside the authoritarian structure of this hate-filled religion that knows inherently that letting people hang on to their language is a way of not being able to destroy their culture? You know, whether it's Menominee or Lakota or the Cherokee dialects or any of the other tongues, Rarámuri, Quechua, is that how you pronounce that? Nahuatl? These things should be treasured and nurtured and grown, and maybe even taught outside the regions where they exist. Unless, of course, as white people, the dominant culture, we've just decided that nobody ever wants to talk to them, and the only way they can talk to us is if they, by God, learn our language. Somebody call Newt Gingrich, Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist. Maybe we can get him to declare that Menominee is a gutter language, like he did Spanish. the first European tongue, well, outside of some Scandinavian dialect, that was heard on this continent. David in Tennessee, giving me a little education here. Both Wisconsin and Minnesota have several highly populated, highly functional tribal areas. A good state map of Wisconsin will reveal the same. For whatever reason, those in these tribal areas are formidable forces over and within their deeded areas. Good. But apparently if you get 6 miles south of the Menominee tribal area, you can get suspended from playing basketball for having a bad attitude for saying, I love you. Hmm. So there's our first Moran Monday nomination. The dedicated education professionals of Sacred Heart Catholic Academy of Shawnee, Wisconsin. I hope I've gotten it right this time. And I love you as reason to punish a lovely little seventh grader and her friends. If that ain't Moran, I don't know what is. Oh, yes, I do. I know what Moran is. Moran is right-wing Republican Congressman John Fleming of Louisiana. Who is all head up about this whole Planned Parenthood business. And he's not just a moron, he's a day late and a dollar short moron. Over the weekend, amid all the flap coming about because of Komen for the Cure's endorsement of and then hasty retreat from right-wing the ideology, Representative John Fleming, Louisiana, thought he had himself a real scoop to send out to his followers so they could tell each other in their little claverns and meetings and churches and stuff. He tweeted, "More on Planned Parenthood, abortion by the wholesale." What was he tweeting? He was tweeting a story with the headline, Planned Parenthood opens $8 billion abortionplex. Dateline, Topeka, Kansas. Planned Parenthood announced Tuesday the grand opening of its long-planned $8 billion abortionplex, a sprawling abortion facility that will allow the organization to terminate unborn lives with an efficiency never before thought possible. There's only one problem. It's all made up. It's from The Onion. And it's not only from The Onion, it's from The Onion 9 months ago. A little bit of irony in the fact that it's a nine-month-old story about the Kansas abortion Planned Parenthood abortion abortionplex. Representative Fleming is, how shall we say, atne ute aitbre, if you one what I in me.
How do I know you're not saying something bad, Bob?
Yeah, it depends on whether you're a Republican or not. Shh, let's not tell Sister Mary Whackbottom that we just spoke some pig Latin. This is the guy, by the way, who owns a string of Rippy Marts or 7-Elevens or whatever, who told an interviewer some months back that he was having a hard time feeding his children? Now, this is a guy who makes nearly $500,000 a year. And, you know, that wasn't the Onion. That was for real. I can barely get by. I'm making $400,000 a year, and I tell you, it's tough out there. Gee, man, hey. We struggle to get by on $400,000 a year. Of course, that puts John Fleming squarely in the echelons of the 1%. Yeah, I'm struggling to pay the credit card bills, and we're living on beans and cornbread. Yeah, this clown.
Due respect, Congressman. The Wall Street Journal estimated that your businesses, which I believe are Subway sandwich shops and UPS
yes.
stores, very successful.
Yes,
my bad.
Brought you last year over $6 million.
Yeah, that's before you pay 500 employees, you pay rent, you pay equipment and food. The actual net income of that was only a mere fraction of that amount.
So you're saying that if you have to pay more in taxes, you would get rid of some of those employees? These are not as successful
businesses
as one
that, I would say that since my net income, and again, that's the individual rate that I told you about, the amount that I have to reinvest in my business and feed my family is more like $600,000. Of that 6.3 million. And so by the time I feed my family, I have, you know, maybe 400,000 left over to invest in new locations, upgrade my locations, buy more equipment.
You do understand, Congressman, that the average person out there who's making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, when they hear that you only have $400,000 left over, it's not exactly a sympathetic position. You understand that?
Well, again, class warfare has never created a job. And that's people that will not get jobs. This is all about creating jobs, Chris. This is not about attacking people who make certain incomes. You know, in this country, most people feel that being successful in their businesses is a virtue, not a vice.
Yeah. That guy. I remember when the story broke, as a matter of fact. In point of fact, it was September the 19th last, and I think we had a rather lengthy conversation about it because some of you who are far better at math on the fly than I absolutely picked him apart, and except for the fact that thank you Jack and David. No, it wasn't 7-Elevens or Rippy Marts. It was Subways and UPS stores. God, I hope he doesn't own the UPS store where our horn mailbox is. Ray with an interesting observation, noting that he says, "What do you want to bet that neither one of these stupid teachers can speak the language of their ancestors?" Yeah, because I can't. Even assuming for a moment that it's English. All I'm good for is when not a pearly with a shoe of zuta, the druth of march it bears it to the ruta. And that's the extent of my middle English. Whatever the Scandinavian tongue was, forget it. And the best of my old Scots is, ugh. That's the only Scots noises I can make. No, I'm right there with you, Ray, absolutely. Of course, Clayton noting that the real problem is that the teachers sound like an absolute control freak. And working where she works, imagine that. So we've got those are the first couple of nominations. They are not, by any stretch of the imagination, all the nominations. There are, in point of fact, lots of nominations. But those were just two right off the bat. Whatever happened to wanting, what, wanting children to learn a second language. Well, not one of those, you know, a useful one, a white European language, or maybe an Asian language, or possibly Arabic, but not one of those. I mean, those people couldn't even write. How do you say Jesus in Menominee, huh? Me, I'm thinking the world's a better place if you start teaching a language with hello and I love you. So, ketapanen. So that's the starting place for this evening's Moran Monday. I want to leave plenty of room for your nominations. You know the number, of course. 877-443-2366 is the toll-free number. And if you prefer and can, do the direct dial thing. 304-658-3333 is how you get in line and get in the door here at the Horn. And of course, like I said before, email comes in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. This is America's listener supported liberal voice. This is the Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182. 82.
Bubble Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And got your bathroom body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
19 minutes before the hour. And we will go to the phones momentarily, assuming you have had the patience to stay there. But there is one more little segue to the story of young Miranda Washinawatok, and that is her grandmother. Remember me mentioning that her grandmother, Karen Washinawatok, is the director of the Language and Culture Commission of the Menominee Tribe and has a degree in linguistics from the University of Arizona's College of Education, AILDI, American Indian Language Development Institute, former tribal chair, strong into the culture. Yeah, that story, because, well, at some point in time, the state of Arizona had a profoundly inspiring, worthy of emulation program that ran through its public schools and into its universities and colleges that actually placed some importance on the presence of Native peoples in this continent, in this world, really. Hence the American Indian Language Development Institute. I think that's been shut down as a result of the whole host of and raft of filthy, bigoted, xenophobic, racist, prejudiced, hate-filled legislation passed, of course, by Republicans. Come on. That remember the story from Jeff Biggers a couple of weeks ago? Yeah, Shakespeare's The Tempest got taken off the shelves in Arizona schools because of this stupid law. And I don't just say things are stupid. You're stupid. No, I reserve that word for things to which it genuinely, truly, and really, no kidding, applies. And what's going on in Arizona is stupid. The law effectively means that Spanish speakers can never hold elected office because of the language requirements. But that only makes sense. I mean, how could we tell if they were saying something bad? Right? Well, take it one step further. I bring you Moran nomination number 3 for this Monday evening. State Representative Cecil Ash of Ripiglican. Cecil has made an ash of himself. Oh, I couldn't resist. And Representative Cecil Ash is a little miffed. Because one of them Democrats, you know, liberals, has suggested that there be a Latino American Day. And State Representative Cecil Ash responded, "I'm supportive of this proposition. I just want them to assure me that when we do become in the minority, you'll have a day for us. You know, Caucasian Day." So CBS 5, the local affiliate out there, asked Cecil Ash, "Were you serious? Really?" You know, because the first thing you do in the for-profit 1% media is you give these clowns a chance to walk it back and not sound like quite such a horse's rear end. This is Frank from CBS 5. I just had a question. Representative Ash, you didn't really mean that, did you?
Yes, I think it was appropriate. It was appropriate for the mood that was in the House, and I think that
If and when the Caucasian population becomes a minority, they may want to celebrate the accomplishments and the contributions of the Caucasian population the same way. CBS 5 then ran out to get some reaction from person on the street type folks, and one woman said, "Good idea. Like they have Cinco de Mayo for Mexicans, we need something for whites." I can hear the screaming all over the Horn family. Well, yeah, because, you know, the 4th of July. And, right. George Washington's birthday. Abraham Lincoln's birthday. Ah, damn it, they ruined President's Day. See, we used to be able to celebrate Abraham Lincoln's birthday, and then a little bit later we'd celebrate George Washington's birthday, but then they combined them both into President's Day, and now that includes that one that's living in our White House. Dang. Like they have Cinco de Mayo for the Mexicans. Now, I personally believe that a little bit more understanding needs to go into Cinco de Mayo and what it was. But, you know, can somebody give the Arizona white people a clue that Cinco de Mayo is not Mexican People Day? I mean, what the hell does Cinco de Mayo mean to you if you're from Peru or Ecuador or Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Costa Rica, Panama? Hint, not much. Maybe Simón Bolívar's birthday? That'd make some sense. What kind of a fetid, abysmal, dense, just skull-crushing swamp do these right-wing racists live in? Well, see, ain't nobody celebrating nothing about white people except the entire history. To this day, if you sit and you take a history class, you would never know that certain portions of the entire planet even exist. Because it's all about the white folks. Witness the history standards squabble in Texas. You know, the one where they replaced Thomas Jefferson with Phyllis Schlafly. And George Washington with Milton Friedman or Ayn Rand or some other freak. We need our own white holiday. Can't you just see it? Wild parties, drinking apple cider and dancing the minuet and playing our native instruments, you know, the sackbut and the zither and the lyre. Oh, wait, we didn't invent those. Okay. Did we got anything that we actually came up with by ourselves? Yeah, I know. Animal husbandry, that came out of the Middle East. Oh, well, maybe we'll just have to have a made-up holiday. But then they'll have to shut up about Kwanzaa. You know, they do that every December. What the hell is that? Why do they got to have a holiday? So, well, that'll be fine. We can have a... Gotta have a white people's holiday. Is there a Menominee holiday? Well, maybe on the reservation. Ray, what are you into already? Sharon! I'd love to hear W. Dick Clark and Ozzy Osbourne try to have a conversation. Is the show going downhill that fast, Ray? Ron and Raleigh. Cecil, huh? Sounds like an asshole to me. At least I didn't have to say it. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
The first time I've had a chance to call you, other than the last week when you were under internet attack and denial of service assault, I guess.
Yeah, that sucked a lot.
It was awful. That's terrible. I figured I'd try you on the laptop. No. Try on the phone. No. iPad. No. I'm like, oh, something's up here. Bob's under attack. I figured, yeah. When I only hear classical music, I know the jig is up.
Yeah, that is Waiting for the Bus in E-flat minor, Anabaptist diminished.
I see. I understand. Now, that can just be the battle cry of the hack attack from, I don't know who has it out for you. You didn't send that $1,000 to the guy in Nigeria, apparently.
That's probably who.
You didn't return that email, and he's waiting with his $1.7 million in Saddam's gold, and you never replied. So.
And, you know, I could use it, too. I just stay so damn busy.
I've been waiting to call you. I wanted to touch base with you last week. I'm based in southwestern Pennsylvania, and I'm kind of near your neck of the woods, and I was curious if you knew anything about Marshall County, West Virginia.
I know a little bit.
And I didn't know if you knew about what, you know, the world of the gigantic energy company ascending down upon Marshall County, West Virginia.
Which gigantic energy company? There's so damn many of them.
Well, I can't name it by, you know, direct name because I kind of deal with them on a daily basis, but they are one of the top ones, and they rhyme with Chevron. So.
Yeah, because there's so many that do. Yeah.
Well, right now, I know that you're in the wild, wonderful West Virginia, but right now I wanted to talk to you real quick about, and I don't know how public this is, but a lot of the area that was purchased to do said frack drilling, if you will, to use that term. I prefer high-pressure hydraulic fracturing, but a lot of it, the sites that they're building and were built, are falling apart.
Really?
Literally slipping, sliding, falling apart, crumbling down the mountain, going into other people's property, causing just all kinds of crazy madness. And came from a township meeting sort of thing that they had, that there's landowners really complaining about this, and that the company that did all this building, to use that term loosely, didn't do a good job. And what you're seeing right now is a lot of environmental damage happening. And I just didn't know if that reached down to your neck of the woods or not. But
well, no, I'm tied in with a lot of folks via email, and there's horror stories. There are Marcellus horror stories all over West Virginia, as well as Pennsylvania, and of course they're waiting for the other shoe to drop in New York. I know that. You know, what happened up in the home of my alma mater, you know, Harvard on the Mon, West Virginia University, the city of Morgantown enacted a ban on drilling near public water supplies. And the county sued them over it. The county sued the city to make sure that they would, that these companies would get to poison the water supplies of college students and people who live in Morgantown, you know, things like that, because one of the places they were drilling was hard by the water intake in the Monongahela River for the city of Morgantown. And having gone to school there, the water was not that great in the first place. A buddy of mine used to joke that it was the only place you could get a glass of water very dry.
I actually am up further on the Mon. Well, actually further down, I guess, would be.
Yeah, it is down, isn't it?
So it's coming my way, and I don't want it. But, you know, you can't really damage the Mon any more than it has been. I mean, Mon water was something I stayed away from for years, but, I mean...
Well, we always said that accounted for the lively taste of Iron City beer.
I prefer Stoney's. I don't know if that's...
No, I remember Stoney's very well.
Oh, I miss Stoney's. That's all I'm saying. Well, here's the thing. I work very closely with what they're doing right now, and it's crept up through Pennsylvania, and it's into eastern Ohio. But a few weeks back in Youngstown, of all places, had a small earthquake.
Yes.
Generated by, and you've heard this, generated by what has been said is the high-pressure shooting of the reclaiming water wells. They like to use these awesome terms of reclaiming. There's a fault line in Youngstown, and it has been told that this is lubing it up, and it's moving because they're injecting into the injection reclaiming well high-pressure water. And this is the best idea we have is, well, let's shoot it back into the earth. And there's been small quakes and tremors, if you will. The problem is, those are the ones that make the news. I know of one that literally a half mile away from a very recent well site, 30 days from the day that they would start drilling, 30 days later, small earthquake. They stopped. They started again, 30 days later, boom, another small earthquake. So it's something to know about. It's something they're very, very in tune with.
Yeah, but I mean, theoretically, these things are registering on seismometers somewhere, right?
Absolutely. It's just who's watching it and what's high enough for somebody to, you know, report or lead the story with. I mean, you can't do the story on the news when the commercial break is dude from whatever farm that ain't making shit money anymore that sold everything to Range Resources and now he happy. So, you know, they're not going to shoot themselves in the foot about that.
And, you know, I heard the other day that just within West Virginia, there are 200 and some odd drilling rigs with their own independent drilling crew. Well, not independent, but with their own drilling crews, and they just go from place to place to place to place. And you know, if you've driven into West Virginia, you've passed that wild, wonderful sign, right? Well, the wild west Virginia, because we have nothing. I mean, nothing. To compel any sort of good corporate behavior, if that's not an oxymoron to begin with, where this is concerned. And Pennsylvania's not far behind. And every one of these crews has people from somewhere else, and that's one of the reasons, I think, personally, that's one of the reasons that these things are so bad, is that the people working on them have no stake in the community. You know, they're just gonna ruin the place and move on and go ruin some other place. They're like locusts.
We've been talking up here about an excise tax, which is a fancy word for saying everybody gets a slice of the pie.
Yeah.
And, well, Texas has one, and Alaska has one, but Pennsylvania doesn't. And it's on purpose.
And I do love that word, by the way.
Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Okay, so we have this thing called the Marcellus Shale Coalition up here, which is basically everybody gets in a room, throws the money in a pile, and goes and does their thing with pro-Marcellus drilling. And I hate to use that word Marcellus because there's also the Collingwood and the Utica Shale, and there's other formations, and we're actually down into the lower Onondaga. Anyway, Marcellus is a good word for it. And there's the Marcellus Shale Coalition and the Friends of Marcellus. Well, you know who the spokesman for the Marcellus Shale was as of late?
Oh, no.
Tom Ridge.
Of course. Has he come up with a color code yet?
Well, I know there's duct tape involved somewhere.
Again, plastic sheeting, of course.
Plastic sheeting. Yeah, you know. But yeah, what better than to get the former governor of Pennsylvania to go and sit with the current governor of Pennsylvania and say, let's just tap a white-tailed deer's head if oil comes out of it. It doesn't matter up here, okay? It doesn't matter. I've heard Glenn Beck literally say, I would tap a caribou's head if it put gas in my car. You know, that's the mentality here. And we're so starved for jobs. I mean, you of all people should know where we're at in this local tri-state economy.
Oh.
We're shot. They'll take any job. And right now,
But that's the thing that's killing me is there's no jobs. These are guys from Oklahoma and Texas and not here.
Not here. And the bigger jobs, the most important jobs, if you will, the highest paying jobs, we'll put it like that. The highest paying jobs literally are done by, I don't know, Halliburton. Literally. They're up here and they're doing fracture drilling in Pennsylvania and West Virginia. It's Halliburton. They're here.
I've seen Cabot. They're around here as well.
Yeah, they're up here. And all the rig companies, I don't know if you're an iPhone user or an iPad user, but there are ways on Android and on iPhone. There's a few apps there that you can find and see every single rig that exists right now in creation in this area, and you click on it, just a little Google map, then you click on the pinpoint, and there's the rig, and who it is, and the phone number, and the latitude and longitude, and it's a horizontal rig, and it does this, and they're freaking everywhere. And it's not just shallow or deep or horizontal or vertical or diagonal or whatever the hell, but they're everywhere. And if you drive through Western PA, even into the middle state, you can't turn your head without seeing a green tank and a little tiny Christmas tree valve assembly. They're shallow wells. These have existed everywhere, and the companies that...
Oh, those are all over West Virginia, too. I mean,
damn where.
Okay. Yeah, they go back into the early days of the 20th century when they were the busily tapping the big engine reserve.
And they're everywhere. So you take all those and think of the ones you don't see, right? How long will it be before these ones now are ones you just don't see anymore because it's grown up over them and somebody hits it with their tractor mower? It's just... There's such a variable right now that is get in there, tap it, drill it, cap it, move before Pennsylvania catches on and puts an excise tax in, before there's a cut for the state. Because everything from, you know, the mountain range over to Philadelphia sees no benefit from this industry. They get no money out of it, no jobs, nothing. No, you know, we're at your local five and dime, and your restaurant, your hotel, nothing. They see nothing from it. So they have no stake in this. Everything from Harrisburg over to, well, the edge of the state does. And they think this is it. They're going to come here. They're going to make jobs. But nobody's seen it. I mean, in Western Pittsburgh, there's 50 energy companies in a small development business park right now. The biggest jobs, like I said, they're coming from contractors. And even if they are here, they're not buying houses here. They rotate on and off. They go back home. They come back here. They're only here to make money, pick up, and leave.
Right. They're locusts. I mean, there was an op-ed in the Charleston paper today, which is the paper of record for this state, and it said it called for a 1% addition to the so-called severance tax.
Yes.
To create a sustainable transition or just transition trust fund for the future. And some friends of mine, some folks I know, were involved in the creation of that. And had that thing been created, I think they said, had that thing been created in 1980, West Virginia would be sitting on some $5 or $6 billion to just pour into infrastructure and the next, whatever comes next. But
it's
even
through Robert D. Byrd Highway and gold.
It, exactly. Oh, you have been here, haven't you?
I'm all over it. You don't even know. I am so all over your little panhandle there, what I call the West Virginia tentacle.
Yeah.
I'm all in it. And,
well, you do know that, I mean, if you've ever known somebody from Michigan and you say, hey, where are you from? They'll hold up their hand and they'll point it somewhere on their palm. Well, West Virginia is the only state whose outline forms an obscene gesture.
You know, I thought I was the only one that noticed that.
Yeah, and if you're making that obscene gesture, and you're looking at the palm of your hand, where we're talking about here is up in the last knuckle of your bird finger,
strategically located between Ohio and Pennsylvania. You can touch all three in the same afternoon, so it's a nice little scenic drive from where I'm coming from. But, you know, essentially what we're dealing with here is one company that came in and tapped them all shallow and sold it off, and the next company came in and dug them real quick, sold them off. And like I said, the ones that are in your area and the ones that are in that panhandle area, slipping and moving and sliding and dilapidated, bad conditions where I wouldn't park a truck on it, let alone a $30,000 a day gigantic drill rig and all the equipment and the pressure and the pounding. And it's unbelievable that they got in and did this so quick that it's like, it's not paving a parking lot, literally. We're talking about thousands of pounds of PSI here. I mean, it's a big deal. And it's treated with a, get out of the way sort of thing. So, you know, it's a scary thing. The question I have is, are you familiar with the Hare Krishna area?
Oh, gosh, yes.
You know, they're fracking, right?
You're kidding.
Oh, no. They're fracking.
Because Keith Ham, who started that and became Baba Ganoush or whatever his name was. There was murder. In fact, I think our good friend Morris sent me the piece from the New York Times about it not a couple of months back. Yeah, there was murder involved, murder for hire, prison, and the thing fell into disrepair. But I guess now it's on the way back. What's the New Vrindavan?
It's a gorgeous place, from what I know. I mean, it's a nice place, but the fact that they've got Range Rover trucks driving around with the word farm use painted on the side. it gives you a pause. You think, really, do you need 24-inch rims on a farm use? Anyway.
Krishna, Krishna, drilling, Rama, Rama, fracking, yeah.
Rama Rama, Drilla Drilla, Rama Rama, Christian. So, yeah, I'm scared to death the entire goddamn thing because living in, you know, the area of Western PA in the first place, I know my parents are dealing with this sort of thing where they're all over Amish country right now, and other companies up there just shotgun blast buying every goddamn thing, and they're catching up to the game late up there. It's the Utica Formation, which is the next big bang. They've already done this down in Texas in the Eagleford Shale, and they've done this in mid-continent Alaska. We've been everywhere and hit it and quit. And the last place that anybody should ever allow this to happen is next to your freaking house or in your development or in your neighborhood. So literally, they're buying land up a half an acre to 5 acres at a time because it might not be you and it might not be your neighbor, but once we get you all together and we all... and we own your
well, you know,
family.
I would say that the vast majority of the Horn family have seen There Will Be Blood, that wonderful, wonderful movie with Daniel Day-Lewis.
The meek shall inherit the earth, but not its mineral rights, Bob.
Amen. And add to that, I drink your milkshake.
It's the scariest damn thing I've ever seen because it's a boom. And what happens in a boom? People die. That's it.
Yeah, and remember, of course, that the first big oil boom was in Pennsylvania.
Well, yeah, they have to go back in this area to 1848 if you're going to sell. And you say, okay, well, here it comes. Mama died. I got the farm. It's dust. We're not going to do it anymore. We're not going to try and farm on it. Let's sell. And they go to Mr. Oil Company, gas company, and say, hey, I want to sell my mineral. They have to go back to about the 1850s to see, well, do you actually own it? And they'll research and all this whole thing that I've read and caught up to it. And a lot of people cannot sell the mineral rights because guess who owns them? Andrew Carnegie.
Oh, you're kidding.
Andrew Carnegie owns pretty much everything that lines, take them on all the way up to past, like, I don't know.
Jesus, this is getting to be like Inca concepts of property, you know. Dead mummified Inca leaders still owned all of their property. And
that's what it is. It's grandfathered of grandfathered in. And people don't own that shit. They think they do, and then they show up to the deed, you know, to the courthouse, and they're like, wait a minute, General George Washington gave it to who?
Yeah, but see, that's never stopped it. That's never stopped an oil or gas driller, at least not in this region, because it sounds like you know the business pretty well. You know how shares and working shares are sold on wells, right?
Sure.
Working shares are generally sold in 30-second shares. And at least it's been my experience, it was nothing for a driller to sell 64 or 128 30-second shares.
Right. They used to be able to do that. They can't do that anymore here because all those drilling landmen all work for the company now. They did that years ago, and then the companies got smart and said, oh, shit, let's hire all of them, because they were losing money on that. See, the man used to go out and buy the land, and then he called a company and say, I got all the land, come on down and drill. And then he'd intercept the money and disperse amongst the people that he bought the land from. But now. Now the company owns the landmen, and they cut you off at the knees. You get it one time, and then if we come back and produce, then we'll give you a little bit spent. But not the way it used to be. Now, nothing happens unless they produce. So they might just give you a nice little 10 grand chunk of change, and everybody just thinks they hit the damn lotto. And then in 5 years, they're saying, okay, now you can leave.
or in 10 years now, you're going to leave.
Yeah, and meanwhile, you get this stuff that burns coming out of your faucet.
Yeah, you know what? There's a sticker campaign up here. This is brilliant. I don't know if you've seen it, but there's somebody going around, or a group of folks, and I love it, for Department of Environment DEP up here, and they're fake little stickers they're putting at rest stops, and it's great. It sticks over top of the sink, and it goes, "If you might be afraid that your water's on fire, please check." And there's a match held up to a little drawing of the, "If you're concerned with hydraulic fracture drilling, please call the Department of Energy." Yeah, it's great. They look like an official DEP sticker that says, "Hey, put a match to your faucet and see if it's safe." It's a great campaign. It cracked my shit up, but, you know.
Well, our buddy John, Dr. John in upstate New York, first put me on to the story of Dimmock, PA, up in the northeastern corner of the state. Cabot came in there, ruined all the water, then went to whatever that phony baloney Pennsylvania department is and said, "We've ruined all the water, but we provided them water for a while. We think they've had enough water, and we'd like to stop now." And the Pennsylvania department said, "You'd like to stop? Okay, that's fine by us."
Right. And they caved and said bye.
Yeah, goodbye now.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry for the inconvenience, you know. That's what you're going to see. It's not going to happen anytime soon. And there's so many people with state, you know, versus well water, what we call here independent aquifers. And it's not a big deal right now, because of how hilly and mountainous this area is. You get a lot of water run. The problem is you will see contaminated waterways. And from time to time, the more environmental impact you'll have here is what I spoke about, is the slip, the slide, the crush, the crack, falling. That's the problem. So, you know, that's what to look out for. When you start seeing that truck traffic, just take a ride around your neighborhood. See what's going on. Go take that farm access road. Go down Cole Road and take a left and see what you see. Because it's a nightmare. A lot of people in Pennsylvania, Southwest Corridor, into your state, are loving every minute of it because they think, here comes the company. We're going to finally get a job back. And, like you said, they ain't from around here. And they ain't going to stay. And that's that. And the next thing, they're on to the next thing. So you're looking at the last boom before somebody catches on, I think it'll happen. Not during this administration up here, but the next. They'll catch on eventually. But how much damage are they going to do in the meantime to the problem?
My fear is that it is enough to make an entire region uninhabitable via unpotable water. You know, it was way back when I was first learning about mountaintop removal that I saw a story from Wheeling College that said by the, you know, middle of this century, maybe the entire central Appalachian region may be uninhabitable because there will not be any water to drink.
And you know that this fracking industry is, 12 years old at the least? Or at the absolute most, I think it's a little bit over a decade.
Yeah, because like you said, they did it in Texas, they did it in Colorado, here and there. But then, I mean, when was the discovery of the so-called Marcellus Shale? Because
it's been in the last 7 years that it's been approachable and viable to actually produce from it. The scariest part about this is, they used to frack with straight diesel fuel. Did you know that?
Oh, yes.
Diesel fuel. But now what they call a soap. They call it soap, which is, you know, harmless.
Yeah, everybody likes soap, right?
Everybody likes soap. Who doesn't like soap? When they say soap, they mean an antimicrobial. And I know that's kind of misleading, because you're like, I use antimicrobial soap all the time. Essentially what you do when you frack and you send that actual perforation into the shale itself, you drill straight down, and you make your turn, and you go horizontal, and then you perforate. And you're in that formation of your rock. And when you perforate, little microbes, microscopic little organisms, appear and come from the shale. And guess what? They eat natural gas. They feed upon it. Well, you don't want to lose any of that. Why lose that to the microbes?
I'll be damned.
So here comes the soap, Bob. And guess what you do with the soap? It goes down, and it kills all life in the hole, right? It kills.
Yeah, because that, when you've got life that's that far down, it can't possibly be contributing to anything regarding the entire ecosystem of the planet or nothing. I mean, it's just down there. It's It's like those stupid little shrimp that live in the dark. I mean, if you can't eat them, what the hell good are they down there, right?
Exactly. So why need them? So we destroy all life because you don't want to lose product. Once you have soaked, if you will, that's all the life. So I can't imagine that anything that would kill antimicrobial and introduce into a water aquifer would be bad for, I don't know, human and farm animal consumption. No. Why? No, not at all. Be fine. Drink it.
Won't you drink just a little bit of it, please?
Like, you know, rub it. Oh, I tell you what, if you delve into the history of companies like this, these companies in Ecuador when they were there and in Nigeria now, in Ecuador, they were telling them, take a can of oil and rub it on your head. It fixes male pattern baldness. You know, I mean, they just sell the idea to anybody that'll listen that this is the miracle drug. It's snake oil. It's literally...
Your God will like you better.
You know, and I'm sorry, but for the last hour after your first story, the only song in my head is Menomina. Menomina.
Yep.
Couldn't read it. Sorry.
Nah, it's okay. I would have gone there if you hadn't, so...
The first thing I thought, I'm sorry. But, no, I'm just, you know, I know you guys are very aware of what coal brings and what mountaintop removal brings and clear cutting of trees brings, but the environmental runoff that we saw on the surface from these things and the mine depths that you don't necessarily see, but you knew somebody that had a kid in that mine. This sort of thing affects freaking everybody. And when it goes shit, it will impact the entire ecosystem up here. It might not be now, but literally within a generation, you will see, oh, you can't go there because, well, everybody's green, or they die, or they're sick.
Well, and this couples with the story of the rogue truck driver that Spike brought to the program a couple of weeks ago. I hung on to that story forever. Guy's an independent contractor, of course. So the company disavows all knowledge of his... Well, who would have thought he'd have done that? Took 800 gallons of frac fluid. I guess, I don't know. Is that soap that's gone flat, perhaps?
It's like hose water, frac water. You know, you think.
Well, he took it out in the middle of a wildlife management area and just kind of dumped it.
Yeah, right. We're very familiar with this. There was a gentleman doing that, not just dumping it, but shooting it into old mine shafts up here in northern, like, northeastern PA at the time. He was a contractor, he'd go around, he'd do water hauling for anything dirty, and then he'd find, quote, any hole he could find, according to the investigation, and just shoot whatever. I mean, there are people who have mine insurance because of these reasons, because, oh, my goodness, I might have a mine subsidence underneath my house. I didn't even know. And the mine collapses and your house goes with it. Now, imagine, you know, Sparky with the, you know, pump truck shooting it into the foundation of your entire world. This is your world, your home, everything about it. And if you don't have mine subsidence and some asshole is shooting water underneath your home... I hate to laugh, but this is the life we're going to be living. This is the next 10 years. Look at North Dakota. Look at, western Texas. This is what's going on right now. We're about to see in the next 10 years if we don't literally put a chokehold on it. And it will not happen until the first catastrophe.
And that catastrophe is sooner or later coming. See, they figured out that whole trick about putting that stuff down the old mine shafts.
Mm-hmm.
They picked that up down here. Because, see, one of the beautiful things about, we've got a real free market Haitian, miracle going on in West Virginia. Ayn Randian, von Mises, Austrian school, libertarian, yuck. They took old mine goo, they took mine goo from where they would so-called wash the coal, and they injected that into old mine shafts. And they did it with the complete approval of the state of West Virginia. Oh, yeah, sure, go ahead, do that. That'd be fine. Did we pay you anything to do that? Really? And, of course, in the areas where they've done that, you've got people now getting sick and dying. You've got these cancer clusters because it's gotten into the aquifers. You've got six neighbors house to house to house to house to house to house, and they've all got a rare form of brain cancer in each home that only occurs once in 100,000 people, but it's next door to next door to next door to next door. And the Department of Environmental Protection just last week hired an outfit called Triad Consulting. Now, they're a captive testing firm to the coal industry,
And they said, well, we went into Printer and we tested all their water wells and we didn't find nothing. Didn't find nothing wrong at all. We thought the water's just lovely, except for these statistics over here that we ain't going to talk about, because we don't want to talk about them. Well, could we talk about those statistics? No, because we don't want to. Now, and that was taxpayer money, okay, that went into that study to say that there ain't nothing wrong with the water whatsoever. So, you know, just remember, we're this little petri dish down here.
And well, you've tried it and gotten away with it in West Virginia. I mean, my goodness. That's the video right there. Let's give it a shot. My goodness. Any state that Massey Energy has been allowed to perform, I don't know, science experiments in the name of production for the last, I don't know.
Right. This is human animal testing.
This is what it is. I mean, that anybody that allows Massey to exist in the first place and lets that prick bastard exist. I just can't put any word on it because it's just baffling that it's good. It's all good. Don't worry about it. It's jobs. Well, it's not jobs. It's jobs at what cost? I mean,
And it's not jobs because it's not that many jobs. There are less jobs because of mountaintop removal, not more of them. Just like fracking. It used to be that the guys who worked the oil patch or the gas patch or whatever, you know, they were members of the operating engineers. I used to have a guy who lived across the hill from me, you know, young guy, family, kids, nice people, and they lived here, and they were West Virginia jobs. But just as mountaintop removal took less people to do, so it is with fracking that it takes no West Virginians, it takes no locals to do that job. Nothing.
And it's on purpose because it's liability. It's absolving yourself of the eventual catastrophe. It's the BP. My perfect example is the BP thing. In the Gulf of Mexico, that was a contractor on a rented rig by a non-BP affiliate. But when it happened, who was to blame? Well, BP, because it's the most identifiable name that's on there. Deepwater Horizon, you know, nobody knows what that means, but they can see BP and go, that's, you know, bad press. Most of these companies use contractors left and right because their bonus structure, believe it or not, is set up on safety. Now, I know it's an antiquated idea that everybody should go to work and come home. What a crazy idea. But their bonuses are based upon that. Everybody in the company is tied to that, and if you look at the way that the bonuses were paid out for BP, when those 13 guys died on that platform in the Gulf of Mexico that were contractors, everybody in BP and the executive staff still got their bonuses paid out because they recorded it as one recordable incident.
Yeah, just one. It only blew up once.
Dude drops hammer on toe. Same thing. Rig explodes in the middle of Gulf. Same thing. One recordable. Left pop champagne.
What a racket.
It's such a racket. It's that awesome. I mean, if you can get on the ride, yeah, it's great. People don't care. You can't convince people that look at it too tightly and too closely because they just want to go, oh, yeah, drilling. Marcellus Shell job. They're convinced. They bought it. It's a spooky thing, man, but I know you guys have put up with it for years. It's only going to get a little bit hairier up here. That's why everybody that'll listen, I tell them, literally go read about what you're saying. Because it is the boom where I live. They're going street to street, house to house, saying, hey, mineral rights, sell. We'll never actually produce here. Well,
no. Yeah.
That pocket might be underneath my house, but you might drill about 2 miles away. And 10,000 feet to the left and 10,000 feet straight up is that drill rig. So, yeah, the pocket might be underneath here, and the fissure might open up, and the frack might go crazy. But nobody cares. It's money. It's money in the bank. Don't worry about it. And that's the opinion that everybody has, at least in this area. There's one county, matter of fact, that's where Pittsburgh located, Allegheny, that has said, no, we're not doing it. And Doug Shields, councilman, said that. Nope. Not doing it. So they're making a move. Allegheny County got their shit together, but the surrounding counties just no. They're on board.
Well, they are economically diminished, and of course, this kind of thing preys upon that, right?
Of course. And what I can't understand is that the steel mills operated here for so goddamn long that you have... The nice thing about that is that you have what I hate to call the union mentality of people wanting to get paid what they're, you know, worth for work. So when you come here and the only jobs are the base bottom, lowest labor job, and the rest of it is outsourced to, you know, everybody else not here, the jobs aren't really that enticing. It's the landowners up here that are going, yeah, bank, money time. So, yeah, it's a spooky damn thing.
And when the day comes, no one will hear them cry, Lord, Lord, when they can't, because it's a matter of being able to water your cattle. It's a matter of being able to take a bath. Hey, you sold, you know, too bad. Because, you know, when you sign on that dotted line, there's a whole lot more than he's going to give me X and I'm going to let him drill. There's all kinds of releases from liability in that boilerplate, little teeny fine print that you got to use a scanning electron microscope to see, am I right?
Oh, absolutely. And then there's free and clear, which is a nice little term I like. I love throwing around, which means, you know, we'll sell you this whole idea, predicated on the idea that when we do extract and we do produce, which I always love that, we produce. You didn't produce a damn thing. You sucked it out of the ground. Produce means you made widget. You put things together and widget was created. You didn't produce a goddamn thing. You cracked a hole in God's green earth and shot out. And, ooh, we have a tank. We got it, money. But when they do produce, it's called free and clear. Unless you have free and clear in your lease, that means... our operating costs are coming out of your share, dipshit, and yeah.
Yeah, that's that working interest we were talking about a minute ago.
We call it free and clear. I love that. What does that mean? Free and clear, does that mean I'm going to get paid? Yeah, just sign right there. The scary part about the Utica Formation is it's all Amish folk who are dying off by, you know, the troves. They can't reproduce, they don't have the infrastructure or just the will. And they don't recruit well. So, you know, they're not on college campuses like the Army. But, unfortunately, they're selling their mineral rights in troves. And when it happens, that's the end of the men, you know, the Mennonite Amish folk of Western PA.
That is shocking to me. Because it's contrary to their entire operating scheme, right?
I don't think they get it.
What, as long as the drill rig doesn't have a freaking button on it, it's okay?
Right, just as long as it's all hooks and tongue and groove and peg, we're good, right?
God. Oh, God.
You know. That's the kitchen, damn it. They just make the nicest damn kitchen, and if you frack all my Amish people, I don't know, I'm going to have problems, because they make wonderful woodworking, and I got the nicest damn rocking chair you ever seen.
Well, you know, we rocked our babies in a cedar cradle that was made by Amish folk down in South Central Tennessee. Likes of that is not coming along anytime soon.
See, that's sad. Yeah, you can't frack all my Amish. I have a problem with that. I don't know. Like I said, I needed to talk to you a week ago about this when it was relevant.
Well, no, trust me. It has not. This is not like day-old donuts. This has not gone irrelevant in the space of a week, believe me.
I'm glad. I was listening to you at the beginning of last week, and I got to call him, and, well, you know, subsequently somebody occupied your entire situation there.
Yeah, let's not chalk that up to occupy. No, these were assholes, and God help him if I ever find out who they were.
Yeah, there's a thing like...
But then again, Ben Birch was pulling his hair out. It's one of those, you hold them, Bob, I'll stomp them kind of situations.
I've actually been following what... Matter of fact, I listened to Malloy back when I was in college years ago. And White Rose Society and Ben Birch kept me going to a factory job while I was going to school at the same time. And every night after that damn radio show Malloy's was over, the next morning at like 5:30 in the morning, he had that shit up on the White Rose Society page, and I could pull that podcast down and throw it in the iPod and go to work all day. He got me through my crazy ass morning. That dude, swear to God, that dude keeps it going.
You know, I talk about stuff like that from time to time, and I'm sorry, I just realized no one knows your first name. We've been
I got to make one up because, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. But, I mean, you know, pick one out of the air just, you know, for fun.
No, we'll go with Hunter.
Okay. Yeah, Hunter works. I'm glad you mentioned it because I talk a lot about what Ben Burch has done over the years. And to serve, I mean, he's getting to be like McDonald's. He's got nearly billions of hours served.
I mean, he kept the light on for me for years. I mean, I followed you after I found Malloy years ago, back in the days of Air America, of all goddamn things. I followed Mike Malloy over the years, trying to just get him on something all the time, and just finding him now that I can get to him and donate to him. And your operation, I just, you know, how much would it take to get both of you on the same show? Can you throw a dollar figure out there? Because we'll make it happen.
And I was just checking here. The last note on White Rose, Ben Burch has served out over 10 million hours of liberal progressive talk radio.
That's a lot of dirty liberal music.
Yeah, I mean, those are Carl Sagan numbers, you know.
Awesome.
And, you know, the horn's been a bunch of those.
Going
back to 2004.
For years, you guys have kept it on, and I've called into Malloy over the years, and this is the first time I've actually got to call into you because of what I do. I just can't. This is therapy for me to a certain degree because there's no, I guarantee anybody that I work with can hear it. But at the same time, you know, you guys got to know a little insight on this shit because it's so dirty. It's so awful. We literally are cherry picking people from Environmental Protection Agency up here to work at these companies. There are people that are leaving in troves from the DEP, going to industry, working in environmental, like, regulation department.
At like, you know, 150% or 200% of what they were making, right?
And that's the thing. I mean, they're taking it because it's a state job. You can only go up so high. It's volatile in funding because of depending on what administration you work underneath. Sometimes it ain't as good as it used to be, considering you got Corbett up here now, who is pretty pro-drilling right now, depending on which way the wind's blowing that day. But he won't be pinned down. They had a fact-finding committee, an advisory committee panel, and that really hasn't done a damn thing yet. But, you know, if you're leaving government, the revolving door into industry, I mean, we ain't making that up. It ain't inventing it up here. It's been going on forever. It's a revolving door. But the people up here are just leaving that service job, and they're good folks. It's just their job's not going to take them anymore. And here is somebody standing there with a suitcase of money saying, come work for industry.
Yeah.
Regulate. Come back here and unregulate the thing you've been spending 30 years regulating. It's awful. It's the true believer is what it is, you know? It's the true believer. You're an atheist for years, you become a devout Catholic. It's just the true believer. The same thing.
Yeah, because, and it's not... Well, because suddenly those dangling dollars are a profound inducement to faith, right?
It's a game changer for a lot of people. So I hear a lot of people that I'm in direct contact with because I don't work directly for any of these companies. It's a firm of a firm, and the main complaint is, oh, we can't hire anybody. That's why we have to go outside. Oh, we can't find anybody. Nobody can, and the literal thing is nobody can pass a urine out of. And, you know, that's the complaint, is they can't staff anybody in Pennsylvania and West Virginia. They have to go to these companies that are out of town. And
because everybody's too high?
Yeah, that's the complaint. That's the known misnomer, is everybody's too whacked out and stoned. And it's a pretty funny story to me. I like that one. But that's like the misnomer, is that we can't hire anybody around here because nobody's qualified. They all want too much money, and they're all stoned. So we have to go to outside contractors like friggin' Halliburton. And,
I just love the... And they're all stoned. Dude.
That's what it is. It's Baker Hughes. It's Halliburton. It's, you know, I mean, it's the same... offenders. It's the people, it's the companies that make pipelines in Iraq and Afghanistan that come here.
The one thing that bears mentioning out of all this, Hunter, is that, you know, we talk about the Keystone XL pipeline and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
All of this stuff is going to need pipelining. Because the infrastructure is old with that, right?
Oh, yeah, that's a map you ought to look up. Just take some time, people, and go look up existing natural gas pipelines and, you know, liquefaction systems. Because you can only pump this shit so much before you have to get it into something and bottleneck it and get it liquefied.
Well, yeah, and that's another, you know, we could do a master class here on wet gas versus dry gas.
And dry gas.
Because the thing that they're absolutely spooging all over themselves down here in West Virginia over right now is the fact that we got the wet gas.
Right, right. The butanes and the other...
Pentanes, octanes, yeah, right.
And that shit makes you so much more dolo than your regular natural gas that can be liquefied. And pretty much what you're sucking out of the Marcellus Shale is damn near production level in the first place. There's a little bit of a water separation, and you got to go through a little...
As a consequence of this wet gas, now, I don't know if you heard about it. I talked about it years ago, and I still recommend the book to people who want to educate themselves on this topic. An author by the name of Greg LeRoy. Just like it sounds, just like Newt Gingrich's middle name, Leroy. Greg LeRoy, several years back, wrote a magnificent book called The Great American Jobs Scam.
And in it,
he describes the race to the bottom, whereby states or municipalities, whatever, are conned into bidding against each other. For instance, we've got all this so-called wet gas sitting in West Virginia, so it would probably be intelligent to build a cracking plant in West Virginia. And they know that. But they go to Ohio and they say, you know, we might build it here. What'll you give us? And then they go to Kentucky and say, but we might build it here. What'll you give us? And then they go to Virginia and they make the same pitch. And then they come back to West Virginia and they say, look, you know, Virginia was gonna and Kentucky was gonna, and look at what Ohio's got for us. You know, you're gonna have to pay us to build this. And that is what we are literally about to do. The state of West Virginia is about to literally pay a company to build a cracking plant in this state.
There's also about the same idea. There's actually a petroleum byproducts type facility that Shell will be building. Same idea. They're looking at, you know, the surrounding counties and, well, you'll give us 5 years of tax abatement, right? Or 10 years of tax abatement, right? Or you'll build the technology park, as we'll call it. And then, you know, we don't have to pay taxes on it. You'll give us a break for hiring people. And, you know, there's a scheme behind it. The idea of the race to the bottom is we like the free market, except for everybody else. We don't really like the free market for us. We like the free market for everybody else.
Bingo.
You're right. It's Chomsky talks about that sort of thing. Free markets are good for developing nations. But when it's our turn, we want that subsidy, that handout, that assistance, that abatement, as they
Yeah, call and as you know, as you may recall from the State of the Union address not too long back, President Obama noted that we've been subsidizing this industry for over 100 years. They seem to be doing okay now. So can we stop? But, you know, that's only, that, you know, whatever Congress does, that's only part of it. Because the stuff that happens on the state level, you know, with these tax giveaways, is a huge, huge portion of the welfare that these companies draw.
It's a front-end tax abatement or a subsidy on the front end and then a tax break on the back end of it. And then the township or the local municipality will say, well, come on in. We'll build you the roads. We'll build you the infrastructure. It's here. So,
I mean, the lesson to be learned is down at the Saturn plant near, Spring Hill, Tennessee, near Columbia, Tennessee. That community, that municipality, it gave away everything.
All in the name of non-union jobs, right?
And then the big goodbye. So
yeah, you're going to see pop-up industry a lot around here. And like I said about the pipeline thing, go look at the weavy, nasty-looking pipeline infrastructure that exists. Columbia and Peoples and a lot of other LNG gas companies that
Chesapeake
exist. Yeah, Chesapeake, which they are, oh, my goodness. Chesapeake, they're one of the finest offenders because they don't go out and procure their own land under the name Chesapeake. They use names like, friendly things like what the hell is it? DPS pen. What the hell is DPS pen? Oh, I don't know. It has pen in it. I wonder if it's local.
Yeah.
They even sponsor Penguins games. You'll see their, you know, Pittsburgh Penguins. You'll see that shit on the wall. And Range Resources is up here. We have Console Energy's national or world headquarters in Western PA.
Yes, you do. They blew up the mountain not 2 miles from where I live.
Oh my goodness, Console's nasty. And I mean, I see it every morning on the way to work. There's a great billboard that says coal. America's clean, green energy.
Yeah, that's like the coal, carbon neutral coal billboards down here.
Or coal, America's first biofuel. That shit kills me. That right there. yes, it's rosy overtones and a nice oak flavor in the back of your, yeah, I get it.
With okay. with the bouquet of an old baseball glove, well oiled. Yeah.
Yes, America's first biofuel. Yeah, you guys, you know, oh God, it's just, it flies in the face that these people do this and you keep a straight face doing it. Like the guy that came up with America, we keep the light on, of the guy in the damn mine with the miner's hat on, oh, we keep the light on. Yeah, you keep the light on it. What freaking expensive.
Yeah, like some guy on a D9 Caterpillar's Tom freaking Baudette with Motel 6. Yeah, we'll keep the lights on for you.
Did you watch the Super Bowl?
Yes, I did.
Did you see the Clint Eastwood commercial?
Yes, I did.
My girl teared up. I was literally...
It's pretty profound.
She paused and she said, honey, come in here, you have to watch this. And I watched it and I'm like, wow.
It's halftime, America.
Where Eminem and Clint Eastwood agreed on something. The world is over. That's what it is. And that imported from Detroit shit, I can't stand that. Like, Detroit is some far-off place that we don't care about, but now that they have automobiles, yes, imported from Detroit. Yeah, we've been treating Detroit like somewhere that's not in America for how freaking long? Yeah, you're right, imported from Detroit. That shit is so offensive to me. I don't even know why.
Well, remember, these are Chrysler ads, and in light of the fact that Chrysler is now owned by Fiat, there's an element of truth to it.
Imported, isn't it now? Anywhere, yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
I guess it is an important thing, yeah. It's not an American company.
that's the Fiat Charger out there that's all-wheel drive with a 440 Magnum in it.
You're right. You're NJLO and her Fiat, yes. Wow.
Yeah. But by the same token, I love that commercial because I've just been watching some of the backlash. When I saw it last night, I thought, oh, this is going to make some people very upset. And lo and behold, one of the first people out of the gate, Karl Rove, says he's offended by Clint Eastwood. You know, I'm just waiting for the next breaking news story. Clint Eastwood slaps shit out of Karl Rove.
What hole is Karl Rove living in right now that he is just tweeting from the depths of...
Oh, no. They brought him onto Radio Rwanda for this one, Hunter.
Where do these people go that they just, like, coffin themselves and they go into deep sleep until the next time that they are needed every 4 to 8 years?
You never see the back of them. There's a little slot and Rupert Murdoch just puts his hand in and you don't want to know. Rove said... This is a sign of what happens when you have government getting in bed with big business like the bailout of the auto companies. The leadership of the auto companies feel they need to do something to repay their political patrons. I was frankly offended by it. I'm a huge fan of Clint Eastwood. I thought it was an extremely well-done ad, but it is a sign of what happens when you have Chicago-style politics, and the President of the United States and his political minions are, in essence, using our tax dollars to buy corporate advertising, blah, 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 blah. And I really need to stop doing the brown acid.
Community organizer. You just hear that next. You know, Chicago-style politics and a community organizer. God. It just gives me the...
Right, like Barack Obama's walking around with a violin case with a Tommy gun in it. Is that what...
Handing out... You know, he used to hand out turkeys during Thanksgiving. What a bastard, right? Oh, what a bad dude. Community organizer. What does that guy do? I don't know. Soup dishes and food drives? I don't know. Sounds like a prick to me. Bad dude. I don't know. Well... I really appreciate you taking my call. I've been waiting to talk.
Oh, I'm not. Thank you for making it. This is a great way to get the week started. And and a Jim Dandy Moran Monday entry. I'm just not quite sure who the nominee is. You know, is this one of those pogo moments? We have met the enemy and he is us?
No. I know what it is. At the end of the Super Bowl, you know, Eli won, and they said, you know, Eli, you won the Super Bowl. What are you gonna do next? And he said, I'm going to the abortion blitz.
I figured it was, I'm going to go give my big brother Peyton a noogie that'll last him a lifetime. I got two, Peyton. You got one.
That poor guy didn't even go. I didn't even see him. Was he there? Did he go to that?
No, Archie was there, but he wasn't.
Go to my kids' thing. Same thing, you know?
Yeah.
Ron Paul doesn't go to his kids' winning night. You know what I mean? You don't see him on stage when Rand Paul wins. You know, he's like, hanging over here.
Well, that's because he's out there crafting those highly professional campaign statements like, I would support an abortion if it was an honest rape.
Nice. Yeah, and I don't believe a corporation's a person until Texas executes one, okay?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, okay. Our buddy Jim noting, Karl Rove has been in a hiberniculum until revived, yes.
I love it. When the moon star alignment happens and Karl Rove sits up from his coffin and goes in.
Yeah, and the theremin music plays and, right.
Oh, God, these people. I love it. Now, I've been watching this for a year and a half now, 2 years now in this area. It's just tacit. You know, people at work really come to work with this attitude of, if it's not drilling, you're making a mistake, which is the same thing. If it's not American, you're making a mistake. It's the same thing. It's the same idea, which is you're either with us or you're against us. It's that same shit.
Yeah, pure duality, pure good, pure evil, no gray. But,
it's absolution. It's the absolution thing. It's we are correct, and that's it. And I mean, there the discussions of who killed the XL pipeline, that Obama, you know, well, yeah, I mean, the XL pipeline will happen. It's just not during election year, people. Shit.
Yeah, because it's not gone. I saw a blast email from the Sierra Club over the weekend saying, return of the XL pipeline.
It won't go away. It's just it's a thing you put off until, you know, you need those middle-left votes, and that's the sort of thing that shakes some people, like, because I understand the president. I get what he's doing. People call it pragmatic. I call it Republican light. I understand it, okay? You don't do the XL pipeline in an election year. It's kind of a hot issue. It doesn't mean it goes away. It
right, and naturally the Republicans are going to try to force his hand on it.
Right.
Or at least campaign on it all the way to November.
Mm-hmm. It's the same idea. It's no doubt. I mean, we'll get it eventually. It will happen. But that's just the big one that's in the news. It's every other small piece of this industry that we don't nationally hear about. It's just not catchy like that when you hear the Marcellus Shale. Oh, yeah, where is that? Nobody knows. Whatever. Oh, fracking.
The last time they heard about Marcellus, he was a character in Ben-Hur, right?
I was gonna say he played trumpet with Snoopy, but that's when Marcellus.
Yeah, Marcellus was Ben-Hur's buddy.
I don't know.
I'm dating myself. I'm sorry.
As long as there's programs like yours that brings this up, it's spiderwebs out, and people will go, hey, you know they used to frack with... Really? Ew. That's awful. I don't want that here. Maybe that helps. I don't know. I just... I tacitly, you know...
Yeah, you got a note, by the way, from our dear friend Jude. She said, call in again, Hunter. Thought-provoking dialogue between the two of you, you and Bob, very good. So,
that's one of
the nice things is hearing, you know, hearing a little bit of affirmation come in along the way.
Bob, what's up? You guys got an excellent social network, if you will, going on with it. It's cool. You get instant feedback for what you're doing. I gotta jump on your chat room sometime, check that shit out.
We've got a great. Oh, and I said it was just filling up at the beginning of the show over the last hour and 49 minutes. We got a great crowd in there.
Yeah, we're going to have to check that shit out. So, all right, hey, I'll let you get on with your show, man.
All right, Hunter, it's been a delightful conversation. Thank you very much.
All right, Bob, take care. Thanks, man.
Bye. And a quick email before we move back into the realm of the phone. This from Jude. She said, with regard to the story in Wisconsin, I've been drawn into seeking a deeper understanding of what and how to deal with true evil. So I've reread for the fourth time People of the Lie by M. Scott Peck, M.D. So, Bob, as I was listening to the negative manner of the young girl was treated by the teachers from the Sacred Heart Catholic Academy, magnified with the Dominionist neocon mindset, several particular paragraphs came to mind. This one. The evil do not serenely bear the trial of being displeasing to themselves. In fact, they don't bear it at all, and it is out of their failure to put themselves on trial that their evil arises. A predominant characteristic, however, of the behavior of those I call evil is scapegoating, because in their hearts they consider themselves above reproach. They must lash out at anyone who does reproach them. They sacrifice others to preserve their self-image of perfection. Scapegoating works through a mechanism psychiatrists call projection. Since the evil deep down feel themselves to be faultless, it is inevitable that when they are in conflict with the world, they will invariably perceive the conflict as the world's fault. Since they must deny their own badness, they must perceive others as bad. They project their own evil onto the world. They never think of themselves as evil. On the other hand, they consequently see much evil in others. Evil, then, is most often committed in order to scapegoat. And the people I label as evil are chronic scapegoaters. In The Road Less Traveled, I define evil, says M. Scott Peck, as the exercise of political power that is the imposition of one's will upon others by overt or covert coercion in order to avoid spiritual growth. Jude notes, get that one, Bob, to avoid spiritual growth. You know, this is so telling because it goes back to last week and the fact that right-wingers are always, and I think we talked about this Friday night, always the victims. They sit there and they decry a culture of so-called victimhood, but then they themselves play the victim under the most tissue paper thin and tenuous circumstances. You know, it turns out that Ms. Handel was part and parcel for the reason for the whole Komen for the Cure flack. And yet the victimhood of the Komen for the Cure bunch and their little exercise in right-wingery continues unabated. And it's there in a nutshell. Thank you. Thank you very much, Jude. Let's go on back to the phones. Hey, well, oh, darn it. You'll have that. This being Moran Monday and everything, there is, I mentioned this a minute ago, and you may already know about it. Cranky old Ron Paul and his conversation with hard-hitting journalist Piers Morgan, you know, the guy who was probably part and parcel of yet another phone hacking scam back in the UK, is trying to nuance himself a little bit away from being just a cranky old weirdo. So the question on the hard-hitting Johnny-on-the-spot for-profit media 1% journalism program was about cranky old Ron Paul's thoughts on abortion. To wit.
Here's the dilemma, and it's one I put to Rick Santorum very recently, and I was surprised by his answer, although I sort of understood from his belief point of view that he would come up with this. But it's a dilemma that I'm going to put to you. You have two daughters, you have many granddaughters. If one of them was raped, and I accept it's a very unlikely thing to happen, but if they were, would you honestly look at them in the eye and say they had to have that child if they were impregnated?
Now, if it's an honest rape, that individual should go immediately to the emergency room. I would give them a shot of estrogen.
Or you would allow them to abort the baby?
Yeah, well, it is absolutely in limbo, because an hour after intercourse or a day afterwards, there is no legal or medical problem. if you talk about somebody coming in and they say, well, I was raped and I'm 7 months pregnant and I don't want to have anything to do with it, it's a little bit different story. But somebody arriving in an emergency room and say, I have just been raped, and there's no chemical, there's no medical, and there's no legal evidence of a pregnancy.
So life doesn't begin at conception.
Life does begin at conception, but...
Then you'd be taking a life.
Well, you don't know if you're taking a life either, because this is an area that is... But to decide everything about abortion and respect for life on this one very, very theoretical condition where there may have been a life or not a life.
What? Yeah, he's gonna have problems with the hardcore fetus fanciers out there. But that freighted phrase, if it's an honest rape, can we have a little dialogue this evening, this Moran Monday evening, about what an honest rape is? Is it the one where she says no three times instead of two? Does there have to be a knife or a ball bat or a weapon or a threat to hurt a child? No, wait, if you just threaten to hurt some child that's not there and then she, well, you know, she capitulates, so that's probably not an honest rape. She, I mean, you know, she could have let her kid get her throat slit or something. Do we need a better... Is it possible to craft a better example of the wholesale, wholehearted misogyny that just grinds its way all the way through the innards of right-wing repig-licking politics? Honest rape! And then I guess he sets out the... sets out the parameters as well for dishonest rape, because if you talk about somebody coming in and they say, well, I was raped and I'm 7 months pregnant and I don't want to have anything to do with it, it's a little bit of a different story. No, damn it! It is not a little bit of a different story. It is the same story. It is a woman making a choice about the workings of her own body. Because you heard cranky old Ron Paul later, just a little bit later, say, well, no, life begins at conception. You know, I had an email from our buddy Tosh earlier today, and he kind of spoke to this issue. Because there's that pesky, pesky, pesky thing about whether or not the thing inside the mommy can live by itself. Because mommy is not a kangaroo. You know, when the little Joey is born, it's probably not an inch and a half long, and it crawls up the mommy roo's tummy and down into the pouch and attaches itself to a nipple for the next couple or 3 years. Not the whole time on the nipple. That's just, you know, till gestation is finished. It's a partial internal, partial external gestation. But we're not that. You know, Tosh writing says, they are rapists. What else can we say about a group that wants to deny women the right to choose? If someone did to women what the pro-lifers want of a sex act, what pro-lifers want to do to their personal reproductive sovereignty would be rightfully termed rape. Using the current definition of rape, crisis pregnancy centers also qualify, like the dude who does who has sex with a drunk girl. Is there a legal term for women who facilitate rape other than madam? Haven't the fetal life cultists forgotten that one of the most basic biological definitions for aliveness is the ability to independently respirate? Until a fetus can do this, it does not qualify as an independent life. It will, maybe, be a life sometime in the near future, but as of today, it is not a human life or otherwise. Obvious, one might think. But not to cranky old Ron Paul, and not to the rest of that gang of goons. Ah, it's a baby. You know, there's so much in that quote. You know, Piers Morgan saying, you have granddaughters. If one of them was raped, and I accept it's a very unlikely thing to happen. Why? Why, Piers Morgan? Why is it an unlikely thing to happen to Ron Paul's daughters or granddaughters? The likelihood of rape is far greater than most people know. Shockingly so. For all cranky old Ron Paul knows, one of his granddaughters may have been raped. But because of the obvious shame that that sick old man applies to it, maybe she didn't say anything because cranky old granddad would want to know if it was an honest rape. Well, did your rapist have one foot on the floor, honey? Well, that's an honest rape. Were you dressed like a slut, sweetheart? Ah, well, see, you were asking for it. Just another magnificent evening with the for-profit 1% Media. It's disgusting any way you slice it. Speaking of disgusting. Football season's over. And so naturally many of you are going, yay, no more football talk. Ha! Ha! And again I say, ha! You can't take me off topic that easily. Because there's still golf. And the Golf Channel. The Golf Channel! Honestly, I don't have it on my system. I get like 12 channels and 9 of them are Jesus. But here's something I, for the life of me, can't fathom. The Golf Channel, I guess, is in that sort of systemic limbo that happens before the season gets underway as well. It's, you know, every sport has a sort of downtime. It's NASCAR before Daytona, golf before the Buick Invitational or what the hell ever, and, you know, the first gem is, of course, the Masters at Augusta, where no woman, no matter how good a golfer she is, may play. Dave Faraday, who has his own history, works for the Golf Channel. And again, let's just take a moment, because it's the Golf Channel. One would assume that turning to the Golf Channel, you might be watching television about, I don't know, golf. Just like I don't expect to tune to Nickelodeon and see Tony Bourdain. Oh, wait, he did that. Okay, bad example. Just like I don't expect to tune to the health network and see Paula Deen hawking a line of the diabetic supply. Oh, wait. Well, I guess TV's just a mixed up, muddled up, jumbled up mess, isn't it? So it makes perfectly good sense that Dave Faraday would sit down for a conversation with Tim freaking Tebow on the Golf Channel.
What I want to do with my life is continue to invest in kids and create my foundation, continue to let it be, you know, grow and grow. And so when I'm, you know, not here on this earth, it's continuing to help kids, and that's my goal.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I have an idea for you. You know, would you ever think of, like, running for office? Please?
Here's the thing, you know, I mean, we've got Romney and Gingrich out there at the minute, and I don't know what anybody else thinks, but, I mean, both they've got the sort of faces you'd never get tired punching. At this point, I mean, you'd just like somebody to get out there and not give everybody else a hard time. Tell us what you're going to do and say, you know what, he's not that bad a person.
You know, for me, it could be something in my future. You know, it's something I have to think about and definitely pray about. And, you know, I have no idea right now, but, you know, possibly.
Well, you know, and the other thing is, that it's just a question of names. We've got Mitt and Newt.
Do what?
I mean, why not go with Waldorf and Statler? I mean, really? You know? I mean, pick a President Tim. That's working for me. You know? Really?
That's right. Politics could be in Tim Tebow's future if God leads him in that direction. Ouch. Meanwhile, Jude noting Dr. Ron Paul, oh my God, Bob, and to know he's an OBGYN. Does that just give you the shakes, the shivers? Yeah. Jeanette saying, I assume that Paul was thinking that if abortion was only available in cases of rape, incest, endangerment of life of mother, women who weren't raped may say that they were in order to get an abortion. For one thing, it's hard to imagine a woman doing that, though if the alternative is the old-fashioned back-alley abortion, which might kill them. And for another, for women who are actually raped, the words honest rape are beyond insulting and probably very traumatic to them. True in both instances, Jeanette, and here's the fun part. Ron Paul doesn't give a damn because Ron Paul is a libertarian Republican and he thinks that women are there to be silent. I was walking through a store over the weekend and I saw this, oh, I forget what it was. There was one for men and there was one for women and one in Spanish. But they were little creeds to hang on your wall. And the one for women said, and I will use my voice at an appropriate time. If it hadn't have been $8, I would have sprung for it and brought it home and read it to you. Next time I'm at the store, I'll make a note of what the damn thing's called because I'm pretty sure that I can find it online. But it's there. See, the women in this audience are unique within at least the United States because they refuse to be silent. When there is an entire culture that is designed to tell women that they should be. Jeebus. You talk about evil. Yeah, I go back to those quotes that Jude sent from Scott Peck. In other words, the evil attack others instead of facing their own failures. Spiritual growth requires the acknowledgement of one's need to grow. If we cannot make that acknowledgement, we have no option except to attempt to eradicate the evidence of our imperfections. Strangely enough, evil people are often destructive because they are attempting to destroy evil. The problem is that they misplace the locus of the evil. Instead of destroying others, they should be destroying the sickness within themselves. As life often threatens their self-image of perfection, they are often busily engaged in hating and destroying that life, usually in the name of righteousness. Jude said, the regular Horn Progressive listeners don't need to be told this, as I know they are fully aware, but if just one judgmental mindset person who views themselves as perfect might hear it, maybe this might shake them to their base. I wish it was so. But that's very, very hard to break through. And I think even that quote bears that out. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Not a whole lot, but, you know, what is honest rape?
I
would like to hear the operational definition of honest rape. Can you furnish one, please?
I'm helpless, Jim.
Me too. As a matter of fact, I can't even think of any form of rape that's honest when you take advantage of another human being.
But, I mean, isn't there a little Freudian moment tucked away inside that phrase and the fact that he would make it?
Oh, Bob, I don't have the knowledge of psychology and psychiatry enough other than the Schadenfreude or whatever. I don't know what is in that man's mind and why he would even say something like that. And
well, see, I say this because, and I think back to my boyhood and civics and government class, we were taken down when those of us who had turned 18 were taken down to the county courthouse to register to vote. Laudable, right?
Right.
And at the same time, they had arranged for us to have a little lecture on civics by the local circuit judge, who was a respected and good man. And he gave us this talk about the penal system and justice and so forth. And he said, who do you reckon they have working as the table waiters and dishwashers and cooks and stuff down at the governor's mansion in Montgomery? He said, I'll give you a hint, they're all prisoners. And we sort of sat there stone-faced, and he said, well, think about it. You can't let the thieves work there because they'll try to steal the silver. And you can't let the con artists because they'll try to sneak in a camera and get some sort of compromising photo and blackmail somebody. He said, Governor's mansion is staffed by, and this was his phrase, Jim, nice garden variety wholesome domestic homicides.
Yeah, they use that system in South Carolina too. If the governor,
you know, murderers. He
they
said
they have trustees and people like that who are apparently have emerged through the penal system to the point that they're able to be allowed to leave the facility and go to the governor's mansion and serve as domestics and things of that.
And he said, you know, the reason for that is because these people are never going to kill again, and we know they're never going to kill again. They're not on death row. They just had that one moment where they snapped and killed somebody, and they're done now, but they're perfectly safe to have around in something like the governor's mansion. And when I saw that phrase, honest rape, I thought of healthy domestic homicides.
Well,
you know, in fact,
for that.
Well, no, I think I can. I mean, I can understand the judge's definition of a so-called garden variety healthy homicide easier than I can honest rape. I don't know what that is, Jim.
Honest rape. I mean, can you describe what, for example, was in Latvia by the Latvians to the Jews there is honest murder?
Right. And, you know, sometimes it's helpful to us if we're struggling to understand the meaning of something, Jim. Sometimes it's helpful to try to figure out what it's not, you know, or to figure out what its antonym would be.
There is no such thing as honest rape.
Right, because
murder.
what would be a dishonest rape?
Unless it's, you know, for example, I can understand certain forms of killing as far as self-defense and things like that. And, of course, you know, have what the French call crimes passionnel or crimes of passion or things of that nature. But, you know, honest rape, and that just beggars my entire intellectual capacity to understand that term and why he would have used that.
Well, I think that's why I said I think there's a little bit of Dr. Freud at work there, because if you take 15 seconds, if you take a split second before that comes out of your mouth, you don't say it. An honest rape.
Well, I frankly saw that particular thing, and I just kind of thought that the man was off his beam. And, you know, I couldn't believe that a physician, particularly one who is a gynecologist, would even utter words like that. I mean, I don't know where his mind was or what synapses were firing into his brain, but it's really frightening. But when you look out, you know, back on history and some of the stuff that's happened, I mean, I was just thinking, well, could you justify the work of Dr. Mengele? Or could you justify some of the other horrible things that have happened with transactions?
Yeah, and I think if we really want to dig down into what honest rape means, at least coming from the sick and twisted mind of Ron Paul, what honest rape means to him is a rape that he can't find any evidence that the woman asked for it, which is a wholly antediluvian concept to begin with.
Bob, I cannot consider any situation in which a woman wishes to be forcibly subdued and taken against her will. I mean, I just can't conceive of that.
Well, that's because there isn't.
I'm sorry. I mean, I've seen a lot of crazy stuff in my life, and I have said so on this program, and I have never, you know, tried to portray myself as any type of goody-goody or whatever, and you know that. But for the love of God, I cannot understand anyone who would say something like that and why they would say it and how they could try to define it operationally, which I don't think he ever did.
No, he didn't. But, Jim, you also know, coming from a culture similar to the one I come from, very male-dominated, you know that there are those concepts of she was dressed wrong, or, you know, she said no, but I could tell she meant yes, all of which are subjective standards that are defined by a male.
I wonder what he would say to things like date rape.
Well, see, that's not an honest rape in his. That's an over. Because remember, this guy's a libertarian, Jim. Something like date rape is not an honest rape, because that is something that has been. That's a creature of legal creation that turns on consent and not force. You see?
In other words, a person who is drugged has no protection as far as this particular situation is concerned, right?
Well, even absent the drugs, let's say the woman is completely within her faculties, but it's one of those situations like I mentioned a minute ago where, well, she said no, but she meant yes. I mean, I could see it in her eyes.
No, Bob.
But that happens, Jim.
I can hear it within their voice. They either say yes or they say no.
Right, but you have a fairly well-developed moral and ethical cortex, if you will.
Well, of course, absolutely. And I can't understand that particular type of thing. That, in spite of the many bizarre things that I've seen in my life, I mean, I've never been able to understand this thing of honest rape and how another person could enjoy overtaking a human female or male or whatever and forcing themselves by whatever means into that human being. How could they enjoy that? I mean, I don't understand it.
That's one of the ancient failings of many current legal codes is that rape is defined as a crime of passion, or what's worse, a crime of sex, when in fact they should be defined the same way that we define a mugging, or that we define a beating, or that we define somebody getting stabbed, i.e. a crime of violence. And it's not an act of enjoyment, it is an act of imposition of power. I have an email here from an anonymous writer who says, as someone who has been raped, it is a clear and permissible understanding that if a husband rapes his wife, that's honest, honorable, and acceptable. Because, see, that's another one of those things, like statutory rape, that a libertarian like Ron Paul doesn't like. the idea, you know, once you're married, well, he can do to you what he wants to. I mean, the law is still on the books in this state, Jim, that, you know, if I really feel like I have to, on Saturday, market day, I can take Agnes over to the steps of the Fayette County Courthouse, and I can give her a beating with a switch no bigger than the diameter of my thumb. It has its roots in concept of chattel slavery.
Yeah, it does. And it's totally against any type of morality or any form of sense of humanity or respect for that person as a human being. I mean, that's the thing. You know, if you respect...
And not, well, but beyond that, Jim, please, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it's beyond an idea of respect for someone as a human being. But it's a function of a failure to acknowledge someone as a human being.
Or a separate entity other than, you know, something...
Other than property.
You, yeah, as you said, chattel. And, you know, I'm sorry, that's not right. That's entirely wrong. And it goes against everything that I have ever been... You know,
but by the same token, the Republicans, when you catch these right wingers in one of their moments of just, you know, spewing filth, what, Jim, is their eternal battle cry of defense? I was taken out of context. Well, in this case, I think it is incumbent upon us to put them in context. And the same people who talk about things like honest rape, which I think we agree has its genesis in concepts, and I don't mean that biblically, but its genesis in concepts of chattel property ownership. Well, these are the same people that say marriage is a sacred institution ordained by God between one man and one woman, when you can go to the book and you can see descriptions of, and yea, verily, so-and-so did bring forth 32 oxen, 12 donkeys, a sheep, and a goat, and thereby did obtain the woman for his wife. It's in there.
Well,
you know, that sacred bond between a man and a woman is a dadgum property transfer.
Well, yeah, it is a property transfer, but it's also a transfer of respect and dignity and acknowledgement of that person as a fellow human being, not as a chattel, not as something to be used at will. It doesn't mean that.
It doesn't mean that to us, Jim, but, you know, there's a fundamental principle of anthropology that says if you want to try to figure out how ancient peoples that we don't have at hand anymore did things, a handy way to gauge that is to go and find somebody, some group of people that are living on the planet in a way similar to the people you're studying. For instance, if we want to know about hunter-gatherers, we can go and follow the Kung Bushmen in Africa. In this instance, if you want to see what it looks like to have marriage be a property transfer involving chattel ownership of a human being, one need do no more than go to Saudi Arabia and look at the eyes of a 7-year-old child bride who is being passed off to some dirty old 40-something, 50-something man for his gratification. She will never learn to read. She will never have an independent life of her own. She will never be seen in public that she is not covered all the way down to the tops of her hands and the soles of her feet. And you are looking there at the version of marriage that these right-wingers are describing as ordained by God from 3,000 and 5,000 years ago.
Well, you don't have to go back to Saudi Arabia. You can take a look at the Borgias, for example, at Lucrezia Borgia. I just finished reading a biography of her and how she was raped by her father. And, you know, how her father was Pope Alexander VI. And because her marriage to Giovanni Sforza, Well, he didn't like the idea of the credit here being taken too far away from him, so he conveniently had that particular marriage annulled, and then when she was married to the King of Naples, something happened to him, too. I mean, it's just incredible how people have just... it's just a lack of respect and the forcing of will upon another human being and what that can do to that person and the product of a rape like that. To carry a child like that to term, I mean, if a woman wishes to do it, I guess okay. But if she doesn't, what I'm trying to say here is she should have that option. And it should not be denied her. Women are not chattels. Women are human beings. Women are equal in every way to men, and they should have never been subjected to the role in which they have been subjected in history. And I have always been an ardent feminist as far as supporting the rights of a woman to choose what goes on in her body and what she has the right to say is simply yes or no. And if she says no, to be left in peace and left alone. That's what I'm trying to say here. I'm not saying it very well, but that's how I feel.
No, I think you're getting at it fine, Jim. The problem is this attempt that we have been making to, foray into what dark and benighted place phrases like honest rape come from.
You know, it's a funny thing. I've talked to a lot of these right to life people, and I talked to one woman years ago, and she said, oh my goodness, what would have happened if Beethoven's mother had aborted him?
You know, it's so funny you bring that one up, because that is, that's one of those, Jim, that for some, you know how I've said they never have an original idea? That thing has gone...
An original idea in their heads, but a thought would die of loneliness.
Well, that too. But that Beethoven's mother thing goes around and around and around and around inside so-called pro-life circles, because I had that one dropped on me last September in Berea, Kentucky.
Well, you know, exactly. And I replied to this woman, and I said, what about Adolf Hitler's mother?
You know, that's scary, because I did the very same thing with that guy.
You know, and I told this lady, she was a very nice lady, and she was well-meaning. And I said, look, do you know anything about the Hitler family and what Hitler's father was like? He was a drunkard who beat his wife. He was a customs official who was probably very unhappy that he wasn't promoted any further than he was in the Austrian civil service. And he was, like, so many years older than... Clara Hitler, and I would say, dare say, he probably.
Well, hadn't he had a previous wife?
I don't know, but he may have. But nonetheless, the thing about it is, I would probably imagine that Adolf Hitler may have been conceived one night when old what's his name came home from the tavern drunk as the Lord, and took his wife by force. And then, of course, you know, I said, you know, what if Hitler's mother had an abortion? And the world would have been in a lot better place. But no, when Hitler was born, his father was so abusive to him that he beat him unmercifully to the point that the boy was in a coma. And look at Stalin's mother. I mean, I understand that she tried, and I'm not sure, and I'm sure one of your people can correct me on this, that she was married to a drunken shoemaker who would come home and probably do the same thing to her. And I understand that she even tried to abort the baby before it was born. She didn't want to have it. And, you know, Stalin used to talk about how abusive his father was to him and how he would beat him with his belt. And as a matter of fact, he beat him so badly that his blood was in his urine. And what I'm trying to drive here is unnecessary and unhappy and horrible couplings of people. And whether the person is drunk when they do this or whatever, the world would have been a better place without Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin, that's for sure. And that was my reply to that lady. It really was.
Yeah.
That's all I could say to her, you know? But they don't know anything about that, these people who defend this right to life thing and all this stuff. They have no knowledge of history. They have no knowledge of the situations that occurred in particular situations. And, you know, they will try to use all this stuff. And it still comes back to the one thing. Does a woman have the right to choose or what is done to her body or what goes on within her body? And I say that she does, and I've always been pro-choice because of that. Because, you know, pregnancy is it's a very wonderful thing. It's a miraculous thing. It's something that should not be sullied by rape or anything like that nature. And I hope you understand what I'm telling you.
No, I do. I do completely.
Because you're a father, you've had children, and you've gone through the childbirth with your wife. I remember you discussing one night when your son was born how when your wife went into labor, how you had to get over icy road to get to the hospital and things like that. And I'm sure you went through a lot of stress and were very, very happy and just overjoyed.
I've never known happier moments than the births of my children.
I'm sure you haven't, and I believe that. And I cannot deny that to any woman. But I can deny the right of a man to overtake a woman and take her by force and berate and stuff like that. That's just crazy. And it's against any moral law under God or man to me. Changing the subject, I want to ask you a question. You watched the Super Bowl last night?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I was watching Downton Abbey, and I figured the halftime show would come on with Madonna. May I ask your opinion of that?
This is without regard to Madonna, okay? This is with regard to all halftime shows. I have never been convinced that they were actually playing the music. I think it's all lip synced. It's just too hard to pull that off in that circumstance.
Bob, I want to tell you something. That business last night was redolent of the Cirque du Soleil on LSD. Having a garage sale, and the lip syncing I've seen better on Japanese horror movies.
Well, see, okay, so I'm not the only one.
No, I mean, I thought it was dreadful. I mean, you know, Madonna, I've liked Madonna. I've liked what she's done. I've liked some of those positions she's taken. But, I mean, you know, there's time to leave the stage. And I thought to myself, well, couldn't they at least get Lady Gaga or somebody like that?
Well, you know, when I saw the whole barge of Cleopatra tableau coming out.
They dragged in, you know, being dragged in a la Cleopatra reminiscence of Liz Taylor coming in, which was...
First thing, but you know, that's everything, Madonna's done good work, but everything she's ever done has been derivative, whether it's riffing on Marilyn Monroe's Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
Somebody else has done it, and you need to do something original, that's for sure.
You know, I mean, for 54? For a 54-year-old woman, I thought she did pretty good.
She looked good.
I mean, I think she sort of stumbled on one dance move. You know, of course, the big deal today was that the artist M.I.A., mouthed something like, "I don't give an F about this," and shot a bird to the camera.
I didn't see that.
That NBC didn't quite get blanked out quite quickly enough, and that the NFL, who was in charge of the program, that had nothing to do with NBC, and NBC was going, "Oh, this wasn't our gig, man." But the NFL has been apologizing profusely all day. Did you catch any of the commercials at all, or did you follow up and see any of the commercials there last night?
I will flip back and forth because, like I say, Downton Abbey was last night into NFL.
Well, early on, they ran the Elton John Pepsi commercial, which was kind of cute, you know, with him. But at the end, he falls through his own trap door. And I thought Pepsi could have done a little bit better job than to give us the implication that Elton John keeps a black man chained in his basement.
I didn't see that. I'm sorry.
You can go and look it up. I thought that was a little bit silly. I don't think the Pepsi people caught that overtone, but it was the first thing that ran through my mind. Oh, look, Elton John keeps Flava Flav in his basement, chained. Nice.
No, I don't think Elton does, but I mean, when I first saw the opening of the Madonna thing with the Roman soldiers, I thought to myself, where the hell did they get these guys? This is like something out of Studio 54 in the 1970s, when they used to have some of those bacchanals there, you know?
Them was some big old burly boys, too.
Yeah, and then it ended with this thing saying, world peace. And I thought, what is the connection between the first part of that commercial, the dance ensemble, which I thought was strange, and particularly that particularly huge person up there in this huge gown.
Oh, that was CeeLo Green.
Well, whoever. I thought to myself, my Lord in heaven, I've got a 56-inch TV, but I said, God knows, I can barely hold him on that.
And then, Jesus, of course, Jim.
Well, I mean, I just, you know, I love festivity in sport, and I love good theater. I do.
Yeah.
But it was just bad theater.
It was.
Bad.
All Super Bowl halftime shows are. Because
that's the reason I like the Olympics, because at least at the Olympics, when they have these spectaculars and things like that, particularly with the opening ceremony and the closing ceremony and things of that nature, they are so well choreographed and they're so beautiful. And they just bring to me a sense of unity and a sense of pleasure, as well as just well-being. But as far as these Super Bowl things are concerned, and the money going into them, and what is it, $30 million for 15 seconds, or is that the correct thing?
I think it was $30 million for a minute and $15 million for a 30-second spot, something like that.
I thought to myself, my Lord, this is incredible that all this money is being spent, and this is being shown as a representation of America in over 148 countries. I was really ashamed after I saw it.
I have a lot of those moments. That's like that Adam Richman who eats anything that isn't moving. That's one of those shows that on the Travel Channel. It makes me ashamed to be an American. I'm going to eat.
Yeah,
here, starving child, watch me eat more food than you'll eat in the rest of your life. Because I'm an American.
Is this the guy who eats all these bizarre creatures?
No. That's Zimmern, Andrew Zimmern. He's not a bad cat. This is Adam Richman. He's the son of the guy who did restaurant critiques for either GQ or Esquire or something. Alan Richman, I think. But Adam is man. That's what it was. Man versus food, Jim.
Okay.
And it's totally repulsive. You know, here I am at the Roadhouse in Terlingua, Texas, and they're bringing me a hamburger made with an entire cow.
30-pound hamburger or something like
that. Yeah, and you got a lot of people behind him going, eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it, yay.
Yeah, I mean, it is repulsive, absolutely repulsive, and I think I have watched this guy for like 5 seconds, and sometimes he follows Tony Bourdain on his show.
Yeah,
and I like a lot. I enjoy his critique of food and his restaurants and things like that. And I remember you had him on the show, but he's a very intelligent, very and highly articulate person who I have a great deal of respect for. But this other guy, it's just a human pig.
Well, it is spectacle for spectacle's sake. It's like deep frying a damn Twinkie, Jim. You know, it's not gilding the lily. It's whatever the opposite of that is. And I'm trying not to be, you know, too overtly distasteful.
I think these particular spectacles appeal to the one's baser nature, if such a word exists, or the basis of our nature, to see some guy engulf food like that, and it's just bad taste, and it's just I don't know why it should be on TV, but it is. But I mean, why do we have people who are announcing on TV, Bob, who can't even distinguish between an objective and a nominative pronoun? Or who can't even discern between was when it's was and were when they're using the subjunctive tense or mood, you know?
Yeah. Maybe we just expect too much.
They need a course in basic English grammar. And, you know, that's just the way I look at it. Maybe I'm being piss elegant here, but that's just the way I feel.
Well, that's no. You'll get no pushback from me on that. In fact, you just got fan mail from Kim. She said, Jim, I love. He just made my day better. And
well, tell him.
Let him know he's a welcome voice of the Horn family.
Well, I thank her from the bottom of my heart, because a lot of times the things I say don't appeal to a lot of people out there. I realize that, so I speak my mind, and they speak theirs.
Oh, I think there's less disagreement than you know, Jim.
Well, thank you. But nonetheless, Madonna, I mean...
Well, but my question is, you know, they're running out. Who do we get? See, what they did is they tried to hip it up a little bit by bringing MIA and CeeLo Green and, oh, who was the other one? Can't remember her name. But I don't know who they can get for next year. I think they've run out. Because as much as I'd enjoy the Stones, you know, it's probably not going to happen.
Well, I think they've probably run out too, Bob.
We're down at least one Sex Pistol, so that's out.
I don't know. Roxy Music is certainly out because they've gone the way. I used to enjoy them when I was younger, and lots of other groups, and lots of, you know, I have, believe it or not, a lot of knowledge of discography and things of that nature. A lot of CDs and things.
Well, I think they've had Tom Petty on. They did The Who. Paul McCartney's done it.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson, who has gone to his long home. Now Madonna. Sooner or later, they're going to...
Well, you know, it was said even before that thing happened that she was terribly nervous about the whole spectacle.
Oh, yeah.
And I can see why she did have apprehension. Because if I were going to participate in something like that with a cohort of Brown's best... I thought to myself, what are they going to do here? Are they going to reenact the conquest of Britain?
Well, you know, they did that in the Flavian Amphitheater once, didn't they?
Oh, I'm sure they did a lot of things.
And since it's been done, it's up for being redone, right?
Well, I mean, that's what I thought of. I said, what the hell is this? I said, is this one of those spectacles of what occurred in the Circus Maximus or when who was it, Trajan, who built the Colosseum or started the building of the Colosseum?
Yeah, well, I think it was Trajan.
And I think his successor had to finish it. But I just thought to myself, you know, what bread and circuses are we being led to enjoy? And I thanked God for PBS and the show that I saw earlier on PBS before Downton Abbey.
Well, the game was a darn fine game. I mean, it used to be that we went through a long dry spell there. Of course, you know, the San Francisco fans probably enjoy it, but where most of the Super Bowls sucked because it just involved San Francisco running away with the game this thing had pathos and drama and Tom Brady losing to Eli Manning twice and Eli following, you know, putting works behind his words, you know, at the beginning of the season. He said, I am an elite quarterback, because nobody would treat him as such.
I understand what you're saying, but I am, of course, out of my depth here because, as you know, I'm no football fan.
Yeah, I understand.
It's like Oscar Wilde said, it's the unmentionable in pursuit of the inedible, and that's...
That was on fox hunting, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what he said about fox hunting, but nonetheless, yeah, he did. And I've never really gotten into it that much. I mean, as far as teaching strategy and things like that, I guess okay. But I've just never been much of a football fan. I'll leave that up to you guys.
You know, watching Welker drop that pass at the 13-yard line.
Well, see, what that does for you is what I see competition at the Olympics does for me.
Yeah, and it's the same thing that going to the original Olympics where, you know, everybody was naked and all oiled up, or going to the theater, you know. Everybody remembers that the Olympics in ancient Greece was an athletic competition, but at the same time there was also an Olympic theater competition, So after you'd watch the naked guys run around for a while, you would go and watch the gods work out their vengeance on some poor bastard.
But also, it meant during those times, during the city states, during the inception of the Olympics, that there was a time of peace.
Yeah, yes, imposed peace.
And that's the reason that I, you know, enjoy the Olympics so much, is because it's the only time that I really get to see the world have some type of unity and competitive edge as far as sport and the history of sport in festivity are concerned. That's one of the reasons that the Olympics mean so much. They mean as much to me as your beloved Mountaineers and your talk about football with various people on this program do to them, okay, and to
yep.
you. And that's just...
That's about how it shakes out.
Absolutely. Well, listen, it's... my Lord, I'm taking too much time.
Oh, no, you haven't. It's been a lovely conversation, Jim.
Okay, well, listen, have a good evening.
All right, and by the way, there's more than one Downton Abbey fan in this audience.
Like I say, it's wonderful costume scenery, and it's the definition of an age of history, which we can't forget, and we should acknowledge for many reasons, as far as class distinction and the eras thereof and what people had to endure at that time. That's one of the reasons I watch these things.
Well, and I just got notice. Sandra said, tell Jim that the Christmas Downton Abbey special is fabulous, and they're filming a third season this month. So,
I'm glad they are.
There will be more.
Right. I mean, and I'll say one more thing. I remember that film, The Remains of the Day, with Anthony Hopkins. And,
right.
You know, it's these things are real, and they teach lessons as far as class is concerned and how classes were taken advantage of during the so-called gilded ages and things of that nature.
Well, see, my fascination is also ancient history. And, we periodically watch Beckett and The Lion in Winter around here. Lion in Winter is one of my favorite films of all time. You might find.
I remember my sister went to England recently, as a matter of fact, this past summer, and oh my God, we got a cat bite here. And when she went over to the continent, I asked her, I said, did the channel part for you?
Well, I think my favorite line is Katharine Hepburn saying, it's the 12th century. We're all barbarians. We all carry knives.
And such is the role of sex in history.
That's well, the thing is one great line after another. All right, take care, Jim.
Good night.
Bye now. And something got hold of me, and I was researching because the original play version of The Lion in Winter was a total flop on Broadway. I think it ran, and then it was just gone. But the film version revived it. But you want something funny? Because this is real. In the film version of The Lion in Winter, a very young, and most of that cast goes on to do great things. Anthony Hopkins is in it, of course. But a very young Timothy Dalton plays the young King Philip of France. In the original Broadway staging of the play, and my God, what I would give to hear the soundtrack of this, the young King of France is played by Christopher Walken. No, really. Just to hear Christopher Walken say to Robert Preston, who played King Henry, what is the crown's position on men, on men who do, or boys who do with boys? I mean, there's a bunch of dandies there, but I love that. Robert, writing in from Australia, watched a bit of the Super Bowl yesterday, got confused when one player on the try line, see, we're going to get some of that vocabulary that we don't understand here, got confused when one player on the try line caught the ball and then fell over and people were talking about him not wanting to make a touchdown. What? Anyway, watch the halftime show on YouTube later. Incredibly boring. Madonna singing a song from 20 years ago. Yeah, that lip syncing didn't work for me either. Have they always had halftime shows at the Super Bowl? Maybe it's time to do something different. See, I was reflecting on that, Robert. I'm 3 years older than the Super Bowl. And no, they have not always had halftime extravaganzas. Once upon a time, a man named Vince Lombardi stood on one sideline, and a man named Al Davis stood on the other sideline, and then when it was halftime, they went in their locker rooms, chewed their respective teams out, and came back out and played, and in the interim, some marching band had marched up and down the field a little bit. But there's an opportunity for profit, and that's what the Super Bowl is. It's a profit generator that has some football thrown in. By the way, the tri-line, which I only learned recently because I've been trying to follow the real footy, rugby, that kind of thing. The tri-line is the line of scrimmage, which comes from scrum. Right, you'll get it. But no, the tri-line is the goal line. Yes, okay, sorry. What had happened is the New England defense had been told to lay off and give up the touchdown, which left Mr. Bradshaw running the ball, trying to kill time off the clock so as not to give Tom Brady time for a comeback. And hence the really strange little moment where he fell over into the end zone. Yeah. Now, I don't know who they get next year. It's quite curious. In line, as we wrap up the program this evening, in line with some of the things that Jim and I were talking about, got a note in just a few minutes ago, or a little bit ago, from our buddy Dr. John in New York. He said, I'll make this as short as possible. He said, House GOP members are back on the prenatal discrimination bandwagon. They circulated a memo Monday claiming abortion is the leading cause of death in the black community. No, really. We can address this further tomorrow. That's ahead of Tuesday's vote on a prenatal discrimination bill. That's going to happen tomorrow, that would ban abortions based on the race or sex of the fetus and allow lawsuits against abortion providers if a family member believes an abortion was inspired based on race or sex. And the bill's bullshit name, says John? Yeah, sit down, strap in. This is one of those moments. The Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass Prenatal Non-Discrimination Act. The Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass Prenatal Non-Discrimination Act. The right wing has a thing for Frederick Douglass lately. Remember the how many beatings did Frederick get in a week story from a couple of weeks ago? The whole story is over at Mother Jones. House GOP memo, abortion is the leading cause of death in the black community. That weird right-wing jackass from Arizona named Trent Franks is the sponsor of this piece of filthy legislation. It has 78 co-sponsors, and it's going to get a vote on the floor because it's already been through markup, and that generally means that it's coming to the floor. It's got 78 co-sponsors. Now, just, I know it's not the same thing, but it kind of is, because the coal companies, for instance, we know now by science, are causing massive birth defects in babies all over Appalachia, you know, babies in the womb. There was a piece of legislation that would not have even ended all of mountaintop removal. It was called the Clean Water Protection Act. When the Democrats had the House of Representatives, they had 173 co-sponsors. The bill never went through markup. It never had a committee hearing. It never came to the floor. But 78 weirdos in a reactionary, ideologically driven, race-baiting Congress are going to get a vote on the Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass Prenatal Non-Discrimination Act. Not kidding. And they've even got a memo supporting it. You can read the memo over at Mother Jones. It's from Lamar Smith to members of the Committee on the Judiciary. House GOP memo, abortion is the leading cause of death in the black community. Yes, Sandra, way. By the way, I'm glad Jeanette got a giggle out of the idea of Walken, Christopher Walken, as the young king of France. Thanks, everybody, for making this all happen. You know, we try to raise between $60 and $100 a night. We are only $50 to $90 away from meeting tonight's goal. Thank you for the contribution that did come in this evening. It's very kind of you. Thank you to everybody, the all-volunteer group that makes the horn happen. Our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, our blogger, Texas Betsy, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, my head writer, David in Tennessee, John Fox, web designer, webmaster, show host, musician, producer, auteur, and Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, for nigh on to 10 years now. Serving out over 10 million hours of liberal progressive radio. And of course, thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there, learn about the heroic work of Coal River Mountain Watch, including the Coal River Wind Project. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.